It's showtime.
Bob Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this 11th day of March, 2021. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's also where you go if you'd like to augment your listening experience by participating in the madcap, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza known as The Horn Chat Room. Pick yourself out a screen name and a password, pop right in, and you'll be met by the early arriver, Squeaky. Thank you, Squeaky, for being early and there for everybody else who comes by. Squeaky will holler howdy at anybody who wanders in. And, of course, capably moderated by longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator, Sparky, who, while he is a third-stage guild navigator, has chosen not to fold space and remains Sparky. Yes. How does that song lyric go? What a day this has been. What a rare mood I'm in. Yes, indeed. It was near perfect outside today. We got up near 70 degrees. Here in the fabulous Horn Studio at the magnificent Kincaid Mansion, it is presently 74 degrees. And frankly, I've just got too much stuff on to be able to do naked radio. God knows I wish I could, but nope. Nope. Because Agnes and I both got up this morning, got dressed, and put ourselves together and made it to the vaccination site by in plenty of time to be on time. And so I come to you this evening a partially vaccinated American, and I could not be happier. We got the Pfizer shot, and we will get, because the goddess of irony is a good goddess, and she watches over us at all times, we will get our second Pfizer vaccine on April 1st, of course, yes. And after that, we will be fully immunized, I suppose. It will have taken its effect and done everything it's going to do, along about Agnes's birthday. And what a wonderful birthday gift that will be. It's been a fantastic day. I was surprised. I mean, when I get a flu shot, I definitely feel the needle go in. The needle for this Pfizer vaccine was along the lines of something close to acupuncture. I never felt it go in. I looked at the nurse and I said, "You sure that one had a needle on it? Sure you didn't just squirt that all over my arm?" She said, No, it had a needle. And it's just a really, really fine one," which was nice. I mean, seriously, I didn't know I'd been jabbed. So they stuck the Band-Aid on us, and I had to wait 15 minutes to make sure that I wasn't, as Make West Virginia Great Big Old Governor Jim Justice has so often suggested, I had to wait to make sure that my antlers didn't sprout. Agnes had to wait 30 minutes to make sure her antlers didn't sprout. Neither of us sprouted antlers. And so thereafter, we got in the car, stopped and did some Krogering, had to have more water. Like I said, I can't remember the last time I drank a bottle of pop or a glass of tea, and coffee and water, that's pretty much it. So I had to have more water, and then I stopped because she'd been in a hurry all morning, and she and was absolutely beautiful. And so I stopped and got her some nice miso soup, and we came home. And so far, so good. Hadn't had any side effects. But later on, as the day wore on, Agnes is feeling kind of icky. And later on, I got a headache, and it's still there. And the injection site did begin to be painful. But it's certainly nothing to complain about. The injection site is certainly not nearly as painful as a flu vaccine. Or God knows, a few years back, that shingles vaccine. Frank! Yeah, never mind. So far, so good. Neither of us took any ibuprofen before, neither of us have had any since. And probably that'll change, like, after airtime, just to make sure that, you know. But it's a six-hour window, according to the CDC. So it feels pretty good, except for the headache. And I am anxious to get some ibuprofen in me. If the headache gets too much worse, I may bail. But at this point in time, it's tolerable. Jack in Shreveport with a note. Vaccine needle. I heard Whoopi Goldberg say the same thing this morning. She basically didn't feel the needle go in. And it went into the nice meaty part of the of my upper arm. I'm not sure which muscle. It's not a bicep. That's whatever it is. And somebody will tell me in the Horn Family Community Congregation. But all good, nothing to complain about, and plenty to be excited about. So if you get a chance, the minute you get the chance, and however it is they open the windows of opportunity, take it, please. The sooner, the better, but you know that. In Alaska, apparently there are so many mask holes and COVIDiots that they've gone ahead and opened up vaccinations to anybody above 16 who wants one. Now, Alaska does not have a huge population, but that's saying something. Here, it's 50 and up and 40 for teachers. Sparky just told us in the chat room that he's taking his lovely spouse for her first injection at 3:00 Pacific Standard Time, and he gets his in about 2 weeks. So congratulations, and that's wonderful to hear. Let's see, Lee in New York, obligatory Star Trek reference: The Deadly Years, McCoy. Now, this isn't going to hurt a bit, Chekhov. That's what you said last time. McCoy, did it hurt? Chekhov. Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. I had no idea, but that's a cowbell for Billable Rick. Robin, the injection went into your transept. Did it really? Well, that explains everything, doesn't it? Transept. Puns. Ugh. So that's the story of the vaccine so far. Of course, every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. Oh, no. So thanks go out for this 11th day of the month to our 11th day of the month PayPal subscribers. And that means... thank you very kindly to Paul from Parts Unknown. And thank you to Tony and Chico, one of our longest-standing subscribers. Thank you to Christopher. Thank you to John. Thank you to Martin. That's it. Thank you to Martin last night. Thank you so kindly. And thanks to Jessica up in Minnesota, who had a message. And I do so appreciate it. And it was a lovely message. She said, since you had the lovely and talented Miss Terry Ellen on the show last night, which I greatly enjoyed, to discuss transgender issues. I feel it's only fitting that I should contribute $19.69 in observance of Stonewall, the event that touched off the gay rights movement in June, July of 1969. I offer this in memory of the members of the LGBTQIA plus community who are no longer with us, and in honor of those who still are. I give this in gratitude for those who went before and made it possible for me to finally cast aside my shell and be my true self. I give this with the hope that others like you and me, Robin, who come after, will have a better and more tolerant world in which they can live as they wish, in acceptance and without fear or prejudice. And I'm going to try to make that reality occur to the best of my ability in whatever capacity, including supporting the show. Mostly, I'm going to stand and be noted. I'm going to be visible and be a voice in the choir of the less than 1%. I'm going to fly the pastels. I'm going to proudly proclaim I am Jessica, and I am a transgender woman. And to be silly, another 31 cents for an even $20, because I know how hard a time you have with mathematics. And take that, 1969, please, and make it a Stonewall challenge in support of trans kids and transgender rights in general. Thank you, Jessica. It's deeply touching, and thank you for that entire message. Thank you so very much. So the Stonewall Challenge is on the table this evening, and Jessica hoping everybody else, that'd be a miracle, but that people will kick in $19.69 in support of trans kids and trans rights generally. Thank you, Jessica. Thank you so very much indeed. That just touched me to the core of my soul. Truly, truly did. And so here's the rough part of that. The fundraising goal for this evening. I don't think I've ever had to say this before. The fundraising goal for this evening is $1,000. That means 300 this evening, 300 Wednesday, 300 Tuesday, that's 9. And then $100 to finish Monday. And that's how it's been of late, because these are hard times. Made harder, of course, by Republicans who don't give a good goddamn if the whole country burns to the ground, as long as Nitwit Nero is happy. But that's the reality. And so we will try to hopefully knock some of that out, and hopefully folks will be largely interested in the program. And, well, thank you. Thank you, Jessica, for getting us started. I don't know if Joey and Giraffe are busy. But I did not, as of airtime, see a journal from Joey. Maybe I missed it. I did have some errands to run today down into the settlements for provisions. I mentioned the water earlier. And I'd also like to add that we have a challenge on the table, courtesy of an anonymous friend, who wants to match the first $100 that come in with a When Billionaires Choose, You Lose challenge for the program this Thorn in the Side Thursday. Thank you. Thank you to our anonymous friend. Our anonymous friend carries a lot of water around here and goes a long way, as do some others, to keep the program going. And a number of people who, the reason the fundraising goal went up, just so you'll know, is because a number of the people who are big supporters of the program asked me to do that. Steve mentioned it. Other people chimed in, saying that it was unsustainable to try to live the way that, well, we've been living all these years. So that's why it is where it is. It was not my choice. It was an idea put forward by people who go a very long way in keeping this program on the air. So thanks to our anonymous friend, the $100 When Billionaires Choose, You Lose challenge. And if that's met, it'll wipe out Monday. It will take $100 out of Tuesday. And following up on that, Ralphs just said, okay, the Oh Dear Challenge. Oh Dear. I'll contribute $25 if other people contribute $25. So Ralphs is looking for somebody to stand with her, and that'll knock out some more of the deficit, which is getting scarier and scarier, it seems like, every week. I hate talking about all of this, you know that, but sometimes it has to be talked about. So, it is, of course, Thorn in the Side Thursday, and I wanted to begin the program this evening just with an observation. Now, this is not to say that I hauled out the tattered purple robe with the frayed appliqué moons and stars on it and "Will thee kiss me in the dark, baby," written in glow-in-the-dark ink across the front of it. But it kind of did. And I also hauled out the busted old magic eight ball with the cracked screen that says "Answer Hazy, Ask Again Later." And I did it a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about the perilous nature of giving Joe Manchin a veto power over every blessed nominee that Joe Biden puts forward. By the way, I don't know, and this is something that Barry Friedman said during our conversation a couple of nights ago. I don't know if any of the other people who ran for the Democratic nomination could have done what is being done right now. As the needle went into my arm today, I couldn't help reflecting on how far we've come in the short space of, let's see, 50 days. Today marks halfway, the halfway mark through the first 100 days of the Biden administration. We are halfway through the stated goal of 100 million vaccines in 100 million arms in 100 days. You know, that's a million vaccines a day. And this administration has impressed the daylights out of me. I don't know about you. I'm sure it doesn't impress the sparkle fart propelled unicorn cavalry purity patrol, but it impresses the hell out of me. Because they hit the ground running. They were working not from day one, but from minute one. And what a stark contrast to the bumbling inefficiency of the previous disastrous maladministration of a man who lost the popular vote twice but managed to infest the White House for 4 years. This is stunning. There's a massive amount of legislation being considered. The Equality Act, H.R. 1, the George Floyd Act. The Democratic House is doing its job. And once again, Nancy Pelosi proves herself to be a profoundly effective Speaker of the House. I know. She is far from ideologically pure enough to satisfy any of us. But oh, my heavenly days. Can you really, really say that she's not? Because she's moving stuff through the House. Just a sec. Muted the mic because nobody wants to hear the clacking. But with that having been said, everything that this administration wants to do is in jeopardy. And unfortunately, I think there was some sort of a restart, and I lost all of my open tabs sometime between the end of the program last night and right now. But one of the tabs that I had open was a story, I think, from the Washington Post. It's another navel-gazing piece about Joe Manchin. And I'm sorry, as I said last night, even though I'm an environmental human rights activist, this has never been an environmental program exclusively. And even though I am now a trans, I am and have been a trans woman, this is never going to be a program about exclusively transness. We will talk about these issues. Again, you know, just a reminder, I've spent more broadcast hours talking about mountaintop removal than any other human being on planet Earth. It's not a boast. It's just fact. And I'll probably be talking about trans issues, too. So what I would encourage, because Darlene sent an article last night from Axios, and you may remember it if you were here. Because when we started talking about trans issues, about half the normal live listening community bailed out. And it was one of those goddess of irony moments because, like I said, Darlene said along that story from Axios where some polling guy from the American Enterprise Institute said that, you know, whether little trans kids get shat on by Republican legislatures all over the country doesn't really motivate the base. The base really, the Democratic base, really doesn't give a flying fuck about little trans kids. And maybe that's true. Maybe I learned that last night. I don't know. But anyway, this program is never going to be about one thing. But I will talk about these issues because, for instance, mountaintop removal, environmental issues, don't get nearly the coverage in the for-profit media, and there aren't enough of us really talking about it out here in what Ed Schultz used to refer to as bake sale radio. So I am going to talk about it, and I'll talk about it at length. And in case you're wondering, there's not a hell of a lot of people burning up the airwaves talking about trans issues either. So I hope you'll bear with me in that regard. So anyway, we'll get back to Joe Manchin in a minute because the whole point was that I don't want to turn this into Joe Manchin radio either. But these are the issues of the day, and to the extent that the magnificent work that the Biden administration is doing all hangs on a thread, a skein woven by a spider named Joe Manchin. Well, if we're going to understand where we are, we have to understand who we are with where we are. And one of those people, for good or ill, is Joe Manchin. A couple of notes before I go into these things further. Steve in New York said, if I do say myself, my observation of the other night to you has proven true. I'm beginning to think, Steve said earlier, that as much as I wanted Bernie specifically and a progressive more generally, what Biden has done with this latest very progressive move, for the most part, bill, has the flavor of the old adage that only Nixon could go to China. And I agree entirely. Maybe only Biden could have done this. Now, I'm not engaging in any hero worship. But by God, if the hard work being done by this administration and the people in it cuts off and begins to reduce the steady flow of grim, merciless death that COVID Caligula unleashed upon this nation, one third of which, you know, was happy to have him do it, didn't give a goddamn about their other fellow Americans. I'm going to give credit where credit is damned well
do.
Thank you, Billable Rick. Robin, your show last night was great. I listened to the entire program and learned quite a lot. Thank you. Thank you, Billable. That means a lot. It's kind of weird to see half the listening audience just bail out. I don't remember seeing that happen. Thank you. Thank you so much, Ellen. Thank you, Ellen. Ellen just met half of the When Billionaires Choose, You Lose challenge. So there's $50 more to go on that, and then there's a $25 Oh Dear challenge, courtesy of Ralph's. Thank you, Ellen. Thank you so very much. Let me see here, Ralph's. Is this the one? Ralph's went out and dug around for a Washington Post Joe Manchin article. Let's see if it is. No, no, that's not it. Maybe it wasn't. Maybe it wasn't the Washington Post, but I feel like it was. But the upshot of that, was that buried down deep in the article was that frayed purple robe, tattered, etc. moment. Because you may have heard, we ran the clip on the air. I think it was maybe Tuesday when Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, railed at Vanita Gupta, civil rights nominee, associate attorney general, civil rights nominee under now Attorney General Merrick Garland. And he went at Cruz went after her in, you know, a completely dishonest fashion, because he's dead fucking Cruz, accusing her of supporting the repeal of the RFRA, the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. A bill, by the way, that, or a law, that was initially put in place by Congress to protect the religious rights of absolutely marginalized minority religions like indigenous faiths, but was immediately perverted by the massively wealthy religion industry Christians. And Cruz, well, you know, do you support the... Well, the repeal of the RFRA does not exist inside the Equality Act, but that's not going to stop Ted Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, simply because he is an evangelical Christian, and that means he's a liar, and he doesn't mind lying. He can lie at will, because in his version of his faith, all he has to do is say, sorry, Jesus, and Jesus says, hey, we're cool, bro. And so he attacked Vanita Gupta. But more to the point, a couple of weeks ago, in talking about Joe Manchin's woman problem, and particularly and specifically brown and black woman problem, I said, watch out, because by God, there's more brown and black women who have been nominated, and they are subject to the misogyny, subject to the racism, subject to the xenophobia, subject to the bigotry of Joe Manchin. So whatever article it was, and now Ralphs has sent me one from CNN. Let's see if maybe that's it. Yeah, that might be it. I'm not sure. I'll have to dig down further. The article was deeply disturbing. Because, among other things, He talked about how he didn't really like being the princess of the Senate and having everybody have to kowtow to him. And it talked about how he's spoken with Joe Biden, and Joe Biden has said for him to follow his convictions. Yeah, this is the article. I think this is the article, Ralphs. Thank you so much. It's at CNN, not the Post. And it mentions the fact that he single-handedly sunk the nomination of Neera Tanden. And again, I remember she was not easy to defend. But back when we were having this conversation, I said, if you give him veto power over one nominee, he will exercise it relentlessly. And so now, when you get further down into the CNN story, if you want to look it up, it's headlined from last night, 8.09 p.m. Eastern Time, by Manu Raju, who is an excellent writer. Manchin on his veto power over Biden agenda, it's not a good place to be. That was a quote of Joe Manchin. Sort of the political aw shucks approach. And so down in the article, he talks about how he torpedoed Neera Tanden for being brown and having mean tweets, completely ignoring the mean tweets of any number of nitwit Nero nominees, completely ignoring the fact that he heard evidence that Brat Kavanaugh was a potential rapist and said, ah, who cares? Never mind the fact that he eagerly voted in favor of an unrepentant, unreconstructed old racist like Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions the Third. But Neera Tanden had mean tweets. So he had to take the president's nomination away from him. And so it talks about how Javier Becerra, nominated for Secretary of Health and Human Services, has gone with hat in hand on bended knee to worship at the shrine of Joe Manchin. And the Undersecretary for Policy at the Pentagon, Colin Kahl, his nomination is hanging by a thread. And so he's had to go hat in hand on bended knee to Joe Manchin, because he has apparently some tweets. So Colin Kahl had to go to Joe Manchin, again, hat in hand on bended knee, kiss the ring, and say, Father, forgive me, for I have tweeted. And Manchin said, he had some mean tweets, but they weren't nearly as prolific as Neera Tanden's. Javier Becerra said, his political background is different than mine, okay? I really appreciate his fight for the ACA because of all the people with pre-existing conditions, and 800,000 West Virginians would have lost, and he fought for that. But some of his other stances are different than mine. But you understand, it's not his policy he's pushing. It's Biden's. Okay? So, Joe's not really sure about Javier Becerra either. Javier Becerra. He's, you know, because Javier Becerra's all brown, Hispanic, not white like Joe. And so it remains to be seen if Javier Becerra, who is eminently qualified for his cabinet post, will be allowed to be confirmed by Senator Veto Joe Manchin. But the one that made me go, holy shit, and think back to the prediction that I made in our discussion about Neera Tanden, when I tried to make it clear that this was not about Neera Tanden, but that, in fact, it was about the danger of letting one human being have veto power over a new administration, a new Democratic administration. I said, you watch. I mean, it's in the archive. You can probably go back and find it. You watch. When these brown or black women come before the Senate they will be at the mercy of Joe Manchin because he has been given an outsized degree of power, which he now intends to use mercilessly. And so there it was. I was sitting there doing the upload last night, and I read this paragraph. Other nominees could potentially hinge on winning all Democratic support, such as Vanita Gupta, as the number three at the Justice Department, even though Manchin signaled, and though Manchin signaled he has yet to review her nomination. That means, I guess, that she hasn't gone with hat in hand on bended knee to kiss the ring. And so he will yet again have veto power over another brown woman. And don't be surprised if he finds a mean tweet or thinks that she gave the side eye to someone or threw shade. I don't know why they do that, he'll say. And this is one of those moments when I despise being right. It drives me crazy. And the article goes on and notes that Joe has vowed that any piece of legislation that Joe Biden attempts to send through on a strictly party line basis, if only Democrats are going to vote for it and all the Republicans are going to vote against it, Joe Manchin has promised that he will cross the aisle to vote with the Republicans to keep that from going forward. How do you feel about that? As Manu Raju writes, Manchin has made clear he won't back away from the 60-vote threshold for the to avoid a filibuster, telling CNN that it's a red line for him. That means Democrats won't have the votes to change the filibuster rules in order to allow 51 senators to advance legislation, even as a growing number in their party are demanding that monumental change in the face of GOP opposition to many of their big-ticket agenda items. The red line is having minority participation in your process. That's the way we were designed. I haven't seen any reason to come off the 60. Holy shit. 4 long, miserable, tormented, tortured years of Republicans wielding their power relentlessly, remorselessly, and mercilessly. But now that the Democrats have a little smidgen of power, Joe wants to make sure they don't exercise it. You know how awful it is when the next quote is from precious Lindsey Graham, who says, "I hope he sticks to his guns. I'm sure Robert Byrd would want him to. And the people of West Virginia, we cease to be the Senate if that goes away." Horseshit. If that was the definition of the Senate, if the filibuster was the definition of the Senate, then by Jesus, it would be in the Constitution. But it isn't. The only thing that's in the Constitution is the fact that the Senate and the House have the right to make their own rules relating to how they go about passing legislation. And those rules can and have changed. Did you know the House had a filibuster once? Sure it did. And somewhere along the way, I don't know precisely when, but the membership of the House, a majority of the membership of the House, I don't know if it was Republican, Democrat, Whig, know-nothing, Federalist, got no idea, but they realized if they were to actually do the business of the people of the United States, that goddamn thing had to go. And go it did. Robert Byrd would want him to. Really? Lindsey? Robert Byrd, who said that his filthy attempt to filibuster the 1964 Civil Rights Act was the most awful thing he ever did in his entire lengthy history in the Senate of the United States. The Senate doesn't cease to be the Senate without the filibuster, but you know what might happen? The senators who actually represent a majority of the population of the United States might actually be able to legislate on that majority's behalf. That's what would happen. And I wanted to get that off my chest at the beginning, because that is, well, in many ways, Joe Manchin might be the biggest thorn in the side in the history of thorn in the side Thursday. And all the dreams that we might have for a renewed and reinvigorated America sit in the petulant palm of Joe Manchin's hand. Thank you to Charlene in Rogues Island, a founding member of the Sorority of Leans. Thank you, Charlene. Our anonymous friends, when billionaires choose, you lose challenge has been met. Thank you so much, Charlene. And so onward then to Ralph's oh dear challenge. Oh dear, $1,000. Oh dear. Thank you, Billable Rick. There's $5 to go now on Ralph's challenge. So what does that mean? So that means we are down to $800, actually. And if that other $5 comes in, we will be down to $760. And if we can get down below $700, then we won't have another $1,000 community-made miracle come tomorrow evening. It scares the life out of me. Thank you, Billable Rick. Thank you so much. By the way, Billable Rick, in case you're wondering, Billable Rick did say that Joey tells me he didn't write a journal today because he had to take Giraffrey to the vet. I suggested that he get a Thorazine shot administered by Viking Rick, but because Giraffrey is often intoxicated, Joey decided that mixing booze and painkillers is a bad idea. Just ask Karen Ann Quinlan, who mixed lewds with alcohol back in the 70s, or don't, since she never came out of her coma. The last thing that Joey needs is having a dead giraffe on his hands, as he doesn't have a forklift. Plus, how would the show continue without Giraffrey's punnery? Well, I couldn't agree more. And I apologize for not getting to Joey's journal last night, but the program took on a life of its own, as sometimes it does. Oh, wait a minute. Speaking of Billable Rick, wait a minute. Jeremy in Vermont says, how the hell did Billable Rick get a copy of the top secret trans talking point memo? And does this push me to level 4 for the actual recruitment bonuses? You're damned right it does, Jeremy. Randy Radar pointing out, I think it's Senator Dick Durbin who's the Senate Democratic whip. He can't get Senator Joe Manchin in line? No, nobody can. There's some talk that there might be, no kid, I've seen this. This is real. There's some talk of having a Space Force intergalactic spaceport or some such silliness in West Virginia, which makes about as much sense as putting training wheels on a submarine. I mean, you'd kind of want maybe a lot of nice flat open land. Maybe Joe thinks he can put it on that we could build it on a mountaintop removal site that has been reclaimed. But that would probably work out just like any other mountaintop removal site construction has. I'll remind you at this point that they tried to build a federal prison in Kentucky on a mountaintop removal site, and the ground was so unstable that, well, parts of the prison sank into the ground, and the barred doors that keep the prisoners inside didn't work real good. I don't know if they ever got that squared away, but I do know that the locals back then referred to it as Sink Sink, because we hillbillies have a lovely and ironic sense of humor, if nothing else, and really nothing else, because Appalachia. We used to have mountains. 500 of them have been blown to hell. Yeah, come on in. Do anything you want to Appalachia. Nobody cares. So, would that get him? I don't know. Thank you, Jeremy. Jeremy just took us down, finished off Ralph's challenge. That gets us down to 755. That's huge. 755, 55 bucks, and we're below the, we're at 700, and we're maybe not looking at $1,000 tomorrow for Friday on the front porch. Thank you, Jeremy. Lee in New York says, it's always someone. I believe that if the Senate had 50 Democratic senators and West Virginia had two Republican senators, there would be someone, probably Curtsy Cinema. When the Affordable Care Act needed 60 Democratic votes, I felt like a lot was lost to avoid the veto. As I recall, the House voted for the Senate version to avoid the risk of failure if it needed a committee to get a compromise version. If not Manchin, it will be someone else. And that was pointed out in Manu Raju's article. Because anybody can be Joe Manchin. The only flaw in that reasoning is that it seems like there are 48 Democratic senators who understand that Joe Biden has a right to put forward an agenda, and if the legislation is good, you don't sit around waiting for somebody to say, Mother May I, to the Republican Party. You bring your 50 votes, you call the vice president, she votes aye, the legislation passes, it goes to Joe Biden's desk, and done. So there's that. Elbert in Rhode Island said, I hope the goddess of irony zaps Joe Manchin with a massive ironic lightning bolt very soon. Maybe a family tree search that proves that Joe has some non-white relatives in his bloodline. You'd probably have to go back to the Moorish invasion of the Italian peninsula to find that, because the Manchins really haven't been here that long. And let's see. The House filibuster, Flavio, serving as a member of the Horn Ad Hoc Research Department for this evening. It was used until 1842 in the House of Representatives, when a permanent rule limiting the duration of debate was created. On February 7th, 2018, Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi set a record for the longest speech on the House floor, speaking for 8 hours and 7 minutes in support of Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, DACA. She took advantage of the fact that the minority leader is allowed to speak indefinitely without interruption. They tried to bring it back in the 51st Congress. The filibuster was reinstated in 1891 when control of the House flipped, but the use of one by one member of it forced its reabolishment in 1893. And oddly enough, for, let's see, 128 years, the House of Representatives has somehow managed to still do business without a filibuster, and nobody's talking about how the House has ceased to exist. Yeah. And Flavio adds, I'm super impressed with Biden. It's been only 50 days and he's done so much. I hope he doesn't pick Rahm Emanuel, though, for ambassador to China or Japan. I'd like to see Rahm go away. Looks like he won't appoint Larry Summers to anything either. That's good. I don't want to see Larry Summers anymore. Done with him, too. Well, if you're going to send Rahm Emanuel somewhere, China's probably as good as anywhere. Because Rahm is a dick and an asshole. Remember in the first Obama term when Barack Obama appointed him, what, chief of staff or something like that? And his proud papa, Rahm's proud papa, talking about his son's new job, said, well, he's powerful. It's not like he's sweeping the floors like some Arab. Because Papa Emanuel really did say that. I'm so old I can remember when Rahm Emanuel referred to progressives who wanted a progressive Senate candidate in Arkansas as retards. I hate that word. I despise that word. I've tried to excise it from my vocabulary. But that's a quote. So, there we go. I mean, it's as good as anywhere. China. And maybe, then again, maybe Joe Manchin would be interested in vetoing that. You think? Maybe? Possibly? Yeah. Let's see, a message coming in from Les. Thank you, Les. I'm still here. I was last night. Interesting conversation yesterday. I learned a few things. And Les says, I got a tub plus five on it tonight, a Tubman. Thank you. Yes, and the sooner we print those Tubmans, the better off, happier I'll be. Although, in the journal I didn't get to, Joey was referencing the fact that I guess the back of the Harriet Tubman 20 is still going to be Andrew Jackson. Can we not just get rid of him? Nobody's erasing him from history or canceling him. We're simply recognizing that he's more of a white supremacist hero than a hero to all Americans of all stripes. Right? Yeah. Billable Rick says, if Biden appoints Rahm Emanuel to any governmental post, why not Timbuktu? What harm could a Rahm do in Chad? Are you kidding? I think there are some Muslims in Chad. And, well, see the above. Right. So you get kind of an idea of what Thorn in the Side Thursday is like this evening. And there is a follow-up. We talked about all the odious, hateful trans sports bills. And while apparently trans issues don't motivate the base, they do motivate NCAA athletes. Because I had the story, I saw it right after the program last night. Sorry, computer behaving strangely. But nearly 550 college athletes have demanded that the NCAA pull any championships from states with anti-trans sports legislation. They sent the letter to the NCAA yesterday, and I'm proud of them. Because they're doing the right thing. Idaho passed one of those bills last year. Right now, anti-trans athletic bills are waiting the governor's signature, and that would be Mississippi Governor Colonel Taint Reeves. They're waiting on him to sign it. In South Dakota, they're waiting for Governor Kristi Noem, who turned out to be a fucking bioterrorist serial killer instead of governor of South Dakota. They're waiting on her to sign that hate-filled bill. And the NCAA, which actually moved with a little bit more alacrity back when North Carolina was having its bathroom spasm, and the Republican legislature was passing potty bills, the NCAA said, well, you just apparently don't want to have any NCAA championship-type playoff-type activities in North Carolina, do you? Oh, no, we do. We want them. Well, and so the hope is that these 550 athletes will help the NCAA see the light. The letter says, and I quote, to Mr. Mark Emmert and the NCAA Board of Governors, we, the undersigned NCAA student athletes, are extremely frustrated and disappointed by the lack of action taken by the NCAA to recognize the dangers of hosting events in states that create a hostile environment for student athletes. Because that's exactly what these bills do. And by the way, thank you, Les. That takes us down to 730. Thank you. Thank you very kindly. HB 500 in Idaho, even with the current injunction, is still an incredibly harmful bill that sets a dangerous precedent of subjecting all women athletes, cis and trans, to potential invasive gender verification tests, while also effectively banning transgender women athletes from competition. Multiple states are following suit this year and have already introduced bills similar to Idaho's HB 500. You have been silent in the face of hateful legislation in states that are slated to host championships, even though those states are close to passing anti-transgender legislation. And the fact of the matter is, if the NCAA said something right now, it might very well stop the bioterrorist mass murderer Kristi Noem and Mississippi Governor Colonel Tate Reeves in their tracks. Because there are championships and tournaments scheduled for South Dakota, maybe even Mississippi. But for the NCAA to say, well, if you don't want them, that's fine. You go ahead and pass your stupid little bigoted bill. And there it is. He done signed it, David in South Carolina points out. Mississippi wanted to be first in something this bad. Now, it'll be challenged in court on good grounds. Of course, just as Idaho's was, and there's an injunction in place, but the legislation is far from over, and you got to consider who's on the court now. The court that ruled in favor of transgender equality, the Supreme Court, ain't the same Supreme Court anymore. You got Justice Handmaide, Amy Covid Barrett. You got Brett Kavanaugh. Right? So who knows how that'll play out? But these young athletes went on to say, and stop and think about that for a minute. These bills don't just affect trans female athletes. They affect cis female as well. Because, for instance, in Georgia, there's still a stand there. In Georgia, stand, they're going to have a team of medical professionals who are going to look down the pants or track tights or the leotards of every female athlete and just make sure that what's down there looks like what it needs to be on the stand, the way that Jesus wanted. Well, these young athletes said, it is imperative that we know we are safe and supported in the NCAA no matter where we travel to compete. The NCAA claims to prioritize the safety, excellence, and physical and emotional well-being of its student athletes and asserts that all athletes deserve a fair shot. However, it is impossible for women athletes to feel safe and supported in environments where their personal identity and integrity is questioned. The reality is that many of these bills cannot possibly be enforced without inviting policing and bullying of all student athletes who do not meet stereotypes of gender and could empower any person to force any student athlete to undergo invasive physical exams or hormone tests in order to prove their gender. Put simply, the NCAA must speak out against bills that directly affect their student athlete population if they want to uphold their self-professed ideals of keeping college sports safe and promoting the excellence of physical and mental well-being for student athletes. And since Les mentioned Harriet Tubman a little bit ago, you do realize that these bigots never come up with any new ideas. When Harriet Tubman was engaged in her activism, there were, of course, white people, white men, who swore up and down she had to be a guy in drag. Look it up. Wanted somebody to have a nice look twixt her legs. Everything old is new again. Student athletes went on and said the harm these bills will cause will be felt by generations of athletes to come. Trans youth will not be able to play and excel at the sports they love, causing a ripple effect that will eventually remove an integral element of the diversity of college sport. Failure to speak up now will harm current and future athletes, perhaps irreparably. As athletes, we want to compete in the sports we love without fear. The NCAA claims to support all of its student athletes, yet by continuing to offer bids to states with discriminatory legislation, you are endangering the well-being of all student athletes. No monetary gain is worth more than the safety of athletes. We call upon you to ensure that the NCAA lives up to the guidelines and standards that they claim to uphold by making a firm statement that you will uphold the NCAA anti-discrimination policy and only operate championships and events in states that promote an inclusive atmosphere. All athletes deserve to compete. All athletes are worthy of protection. No athlete should feel unsafe being who they are. Please show us that your practices align with your priorities. And under those words are 550 student athlete signatures. Cis males and cis females. Cornell University football, Lawrence St. Lawrence University cross country, Bard College soccer, St. Olaf College cross country, St. Lawrence University volleyball, Williams College cross country track and field, Baylor, Ithaca, UCLA, Cornell, Washington University St. Louis, UC San Diego, Santa Clara University, Kenyon College, Harvard, the University of North Dakota, Yale, Clark University, and I'm not going to sit here and just go through all of them, but it gives you an idea. This is countrywide, and it's also sportwide, and it is a brilliant and inspiring bit. Of activism. And of course, the next step after that is for these young athletes to say, fuck it. I guess y'all don't want us to participate. As to these hateful bills, Billable Rick says, I seem to recall that after Pence signed a gay bathroom bill as Indiana governor, the NCAA pulled all of its March Madness games out of Indianapolis, including the Final Four. Yup. But now they're going back to Taliban Indianapolis, aren't they? No, or is it Florida and Arizona? I can't remember. Maybe they're all into, yeah. Thank you very kindly to our buddy Texas T. We are now down to 7:10. We can evade a another $1,000 Friday on the Front Porch Community Made Miracle tomorrow with 20 more bucks. Thank you, Texas T. Much appreciated indeed. The history of Rahm Emanuel's retarded quip, courtesy of Flavio in the ad hoc research department, in a 2010 meeting with liberal leaders who planned to publicly pressure the Democratic Party's conservative wing into supporting health care reform, Emanuel famously called them fucking retarded. And something about Arkansas in there, too. Just can't quite get my answer hazy. Ask again later. Jack in Shreveport, Senate filibuster question and Rahm comment. Could the rules in the Senate be changed to force members to actually speak during a filibuster and changed without Manchin's support just to make it a little harder on filibuster rubbers? Well, the fact of the matter is, one of the things that he's been toe-dancing with is the idea that maybe he'd be open to a talking filibuster, make people actually filibuster, make them stand up there and read the damned Bible or whatever. If he'd support that, you know, that would at least be some interesting political theater. And as I noted previously, I want to see Chuck Grassley at 87 stand up and read and speak for 29 hours. Right? I guess Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, could read Green Eggs and Ham some more. By the way, he's running a fundraising dodge these days in which he's autographing copies of Dr. Seuss books for a $60 donation. And yet somehow or another that doesn't affect the dignity of the Senate. Right? Right. Transports bills. Billable Rick says, in response to the proponents of trans sports bills that would entail a doctor's examining the genitalia of the competitors, I offer two words. Larry Nassar. You know, the disgraced former Michigan State and USA gymnastics national team doctor who is now dead. Who got busted for God only... They're probably still trying to find all the cases of sexual assault and sexual abuse. Or then there's the doctor at the Ohio State University who had a thing for groping young male athletes. Some of them wrestlers. And that even though the athletes talked about it and complained about it, well, Jim Shorts Jordan just said, you know, that's, then I forget, was his name Richard? I can't, but it seemed, I seem to recall him saying, well, you know, that's just Richard. Yeah. He does that to boys. All right. So, you know, look the other way, right? Sure, why not? Oh, and hey, Skeeve! Pinch hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all-around great guy, Brother Bishop Steve, has joined in the chat room. Good to see you there. And got a nice little group in the chat room this evening, if you do want to wander by. And so we have passed the top of the hour. We're into the second hour of the program. That means, you know, and so therefore, to one degree or another, here endeth the filler robster. Let's see here. And, of course, it is a Thursday. That means we have the Green News Report from Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. I always enjoy seeing what those two wacky kids are up to. So I'll take a little break, and we'll check in with Brad and Desi. And that gives you a chance, if you want, to... jump in for some conversation radio. All lines are open. Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn. Also on the Skype line, if you need to dial it in, 304-574-8178. Or the Stress Line, named in memory of Bill, Mr. Stress Miller, which is 844-843-4676, 844-THE-HORN. As I like to say, jump right in. The conversation... is fine.
It's Thursday, March 11, 2021.
Yes, we believe that there are solutions to mitigate climate change.
U.S. Senate confirms historic nomination of Michael Regan to head EPA. Biden's COVID relief bill is also sort of a climate bill. First major U.S. offshore wind farm clears key hurdle. Plus,
when the plant was battered by tsunami, 160,000 residents were forced to flee radiation from its reactors.
10 years since triple disasters devastated Japan.
All of those stories and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Please don't atomize me by telling me that the oil and gas industry doesn't have any special tax provisions.
Ooh, Katie Porter, she mad at the oil man.
Because if you would like that to be the rule, I would be happy to have Congress deliver. I yield back.
Oh, snap. This is your... Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, I can't believe that it has been 10 years since Fukushima.
Yes, it's a somber anniversary. Thursday, March 11, marks 10 years since the triple disasters in Japan, the record 9.0 earthquake and deadly tsunami that caused a catastrophic nuclear meltdown of three reactors at the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant. The legacy of the biggest nuclear accident since Chernobyl remains an ongoing concern for Japan. It halted its nuclear power program, and most of the nation's reactors remain offline today. today, and the disaster itself is still ongoing. The damaged reactors must still be cooled with seawater to prevent a new meltdown. That has generated more than 1 million tons of radioactive water that are stored on site in more than 1,000 tanks at the facility, with no long-term plan for disposal. Some radioactive water from the stricken plant is still leaking into groundwater that drains into the ocean. Officials say cleanup of the site will take decades.
And yet there's some out there who think we ought to have more nuclear instead of less. Go figure.
Here in the U.S., more positive news. On Wednesday, the United States Senate confirmed North Carolina's state environmental chief, Michael Regan, to head the Environmental Protection Agency with a bipartisan vote of 66 to 34. Regan is the first black man to lead the agency, and he will play a crucial role in President Joe Biden's efforts to confront the climate crisis and address environmental injustice. In his confirmation hearing in early February, Regan noted the rising costs and damages of extreme weather disasters intensified by man-made climate change on the nation's infrastructure, and said that climate solutions will also create jobs.
Yes, we believe that there are solutions to mitigate climate change. Yes, we believe that we can create jobs and safety while becoming more resilient. And yes, we believe that we can create jobs on the mitigation side as well.
The U.S. House gave final passage to President Biden's $1.9 trillion COVID relief bill, the American Rescue Plan, on Wednesday with zero Republican votes. The bill also contains some pretty big climate-related provisions. It appropriates more than $30 billion to help public transit agencies remain solvent, which will be key to reducing greenhouse gas emissions from transportation. And a measure appropriating $350 billion to state and local governments also allows states, cities, and counties to fund repair and upgrades to water, sewage, and stormwater systems and other infrastructure.
Now, some may say that has nothing to do with COVID. Your response?
Well, it puts people back to work doing important infrastructure repairs.
At a time that a lot of people could use that work.
In the Northeast, the regulatory agency in charge of managing the Delaware River and its tributaries voted late last week to permanently ban natural gas drilling and fracking within the entire four-state watershed, which supplies drinking water for more than 13 million people in Pennsylvania, Delaware, New Jersey, and New York.
Wow.
And in a first, the City Council of Petaluma in Northern California has moved to rein in new fossil fuel gas station infrastructure in city limits, voting unanimously to prohibit the creation, expansion, reconstruction, or relocation of gas stations, and encouraging gas station owners to instead begin converting their facilities to serve electric and hydrogen-powered vehicles.
Wow. We may finally be looking at the end of gas stations?
Finally, the Biden administration has jump-started the nation's first major offshore wind farm off the coast of Massachusetts. The Trump administration canceled the permitting process for the 800-megawatt Vineyard Wind project late last year. The Biden Interior Department has now completed an environmental review of the project, a key hurdle to final permitting. The U.S. has fallen far behind the European Union in offshore wind energy construction and jobs. The Vineyard Wind project is a key step for the Biden administration, which has set a goal to double offshore wind capacity by 2030.
Very nice. Jump on it for much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today. Check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find, follow, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Sorry, I love that song. I wanted to listen to it until they faded it out. I can't help myself. So we are into the second hour of the program, and apparently our buddy Norseman Rick was eager to get into the conversation. Go, Rick. What's up?
How are you?
Apart from the headache and the exhaustion, I'm fan-freaking-bulous.
And Spock says, meow.
Round of Spock.
I just wanted to call, see how you were doing, give you an update on the digital wasteland I've been living in for the last month.
You know, that makes me think that we need to write a song parody of the Who classic. You know, it's only digital wasteland. No more singing. We got a whopping big fundraising goal. So I'll stop now.
What prompted me to call in was I was playing Fallout while you were talking about corporate greed and all that earlier.
Yes.
And did I ever explain to you the lore behind the Fallout series?
Yes, we talked about that.
There's actually a lot more to it that comes from the original games. The entire game series as a whole is basically designed to put a lens by turning everything up to max saturation for American consumerism. And the fact that corporate unrestricted greed basically is what leads to the future in that Fallout, because a corporation named Vault-Tec sets up a shadow government inside of our government that basically builds all of these vaults, gets people in them, and then uses their automated missiles to nuke the world against the wishes of the people running it. And all because this small group of very rich people decided they wanted to end the world and get rid of the proles because it was too much. There were too many, as they said, undesirables in several of the novels.
Okay.
And I was just thinking about that. And also, I wonder if the area of the country you live in is near as pretty as they make it look in that game, even though 90% of it wants to eat you.
Okay, yeah.
Other than that, I was just calling to see how you're doing and see if how everything's going on your end with the horn.
Today has been largely consumed with the fact that it was shot day for my partner and I, and so we got jabbed, and so far, so, you know, it's like the guy who jumped off the Empire State Building and somewhere around the 40th floor said, "So far, so good." You know, because it's not the fall that hurts you. It's a damn sudden stop.
Yeah, the stop's the bitch. It's just like the car accident isn't necessarily what hurts you. It's the other person stopping suddenly in front of you in traffic.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, so what are your thoughts on what I said about the Fallout stuff?
Well, I mean, it's really kind of hard to respond to that, because while I know the basic premise and everything, I've never Ferg's played it, but I haven't. I mean, I used to love gaming, but that was back when I rode my dinosaur to Babbage's to buy my games that later became GameStop. And I think the last thing that I played with any seriousness, and this tells you how long ago it was. Oh, God, what was that zombie apocalypse series or game?
Left 4 Dead?
Yeah, Left 4 Dead. I played the hell out of Left 4 Dead for a while. I got to admit, I enjoyed beating the hell out of zombies with Stratocasters. It was cool.
Yeah, I spent pretty much the first week in the game for me. Literally, it was a dude running across the Appalachian Plains in leather armor yelling fuck, 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 fuck through his headset as he's being chased by about 30 zombies and a death claw. So, because my weapons are broken and I didn't bring enough ammunition for the mission.
Yeah, that happens.
That's like 90% of my first week in game learning the mechanics. But now I've gotten the hang of it, and I'm enjoying playing with the other players. Since they added in NPCs and gave the players something to do at quests, they become a lot less dickish.
Well, that's not that there's every reason to think that, playing these things is not just a matter of I mean, I guess it is for gratification, but you can learn a little bit socially along the way.
The thing for me is they're great stories. I get into these the way.
Well, I mean, it's kind of blown my mind to see the number of really A-list actors who have lent their voices to these games these days. And I think maybe Dan Fisher and I even talked about that briefly at one point in time. It's the same thing as now. It's almost the very same thing as getting a movie gig, and there's not that much difference, frankly. between recording for a game, and you know, we enjoy these movies that have all the bells and whistles and massive special effects and CGI and stuff. And it really, it's in both cases, you know, the video games and these massive CGI special effects films, it calls on the actor for a lot, because most of the time, or as likely as not, they're standing in front of a green screen and maybe wearing a suit with some reflective dots on it, ping pong balls, whatever. And you know, I just really can't see in a former era. I'm sure he would have if the technology had existed. I can't see Laurence Olivier doing that.
Honestly, I could see him doing the Fallout game specifically because of the time period, because he loved that Art Deco stuff. And it's kind of a Art Deco look at the excesses of unregulated capitalism. But I could see him doing something like that. Honestly, I think what was the guy's name? The one who did Orson Welles. I could seriously see Orson Welles popping his ass down and turning on an Xbox.
Yeah, maybe Orson Welles. Sure.
But yeah, it's not what it used to be. It's not boop boop and two little paddles. It's real interesting when you think about how far they've come in such a small amount of time. And I play them because, to me, I get to go into a world that doesn't exist and do shit where I don't have to put my life on the line while still doing fun stuff and exciting things and exploring stories I've never heard or seen before. Some of those that can never happen in this world, because I doubt I'm going to be chased across Appalachia by a 6-foot-tall lizard monster.
Well, you've never been to Appalachia now, have you?
Fair enough.
I mean, I know several people north of 6 feet who, under the right conditions and with the right chemical alteration, can become, 6-foot-tall lizard monsters, especially sure. If there's like a drink special.
I hope you didn't mind me calling in for my traffic report from the wasteland.
Oh, no, not at all. Not at all. No, no.
I know the video games aren't really your forte, and...
Well, no, they used to be, but I'm just an old fart, and you know, I go so far back that I can remember walking into, oh God, Shockley's Pancake House, with so many quarters in my pocket that I had to hold the waistband of my pants up until I could get the quarters out and stand in line to play fucking Defender.
Those were the days, weren't they? They added an old school.
Oh no, it's so much fun to look at a young teen and say, hey, you know, back then we had to put a quarter in the machine to play the game for 2.5 minutes. What? Really, Opa? Really?
And one thing I sincerely think is going to happen here in, like, my grandchildren's generation, they're going to be going to college classes for degrees in video game history.
That's already kind of happening. That's a college trend. I mean, 1983 at Harvard on the Mon, my alma mater, West Virginia University. One of my first classes when I transferred there was a delightful thing taught by a wonderful professor called... What was the name of the class? It was a pop culture class, is what it boiled down to. And it was taught very, very seriously.
But was it the one about the Simpsons?
No, there was no Simpsons then. Please, I said 1983.
Oh, okay. I thought you said later.
No. But and at the previous college where I started, I had a class called Space Age Philosophy, or no, Space Age Mythology. And the reading list for that class was The Lord of the... And you had to do all this in one semester. And I did. The Lord of the Rings. The psychoanalytical meaning of history. Naked Lunch.
Isn't Naked Lunch that really trippy David Lynch movie?
No. And the last book was... Don't Ever Change Boopsie by Gary Trudeau. It was a book of Doonesbury strips. No, Naked Lunch is a now revered classic novel by William S. Burroughs, in which he basically hallucinates his way through the withdrawing from heroin. I think it was written in a hotel in Tangier.
Okay.
And it is William Burroughs' Naked Lunch that, for instance, gives us the name of the band Steely Dan. Steely Dan in William S. Burroughs' Naked Lunch is a huge, solid, stainless steel dildo.
I remember you talking about that with Dan before when you guys were talking about, or Sparky, or one of them, when you were talking about music.
It's well worth the read if you ever just want your mind completely blown. And it's not like some sort of gratuitous thing. It's not at all. It is deeply introspective. It's downright philosophical. And he comes up with, and it remains relevant to this day because of the opioid crisis in this country, Burroughs's Algebra of Need. Oh, my God. And and the Algebra of Need says, anyone who says, well, I would never do that,
hasn't been put in a situation where...
damned well would. The Algebra of Need.
One thing that what was tripping me out about that idea of my grandkids taking a college class is them coming home and me doing the, when I was a kid, I remember when that game came out thing with them as they're analyzing the Fallout series for its critique of capitalism and the American excesses in the 90s and 2000s or something.
Yeah, they're about, yeah.
And I was just thinking that that was going to be a really trippy moment for me. But something that used to be seen as something that was a waste of time, effort, energy, and money is now something that my grandkids, they're already starting to put, like the Museum of Modern Art is sending out requests, collecting they want a copy of every video game ever made so they can archive it. I've archived them with the help of the Smithsonian.
You know, it'll be cool when the Smithsonian gets an interactive system set up where, you know, people of 50 years from now can stare in wide-eyed wonder and actually use the little primitive pads to go boop, boop,
and they'll lose their damn minds.
Boop. Because, you know, 50 years from now, there probably won't be any video game consoles. There'll just be little wireless Bill Gates plugs in the side of our necks. Or not even plugs. They'll just be wireless receivers.
Well, they'll always...
And you'll play, and there won't be any masks over your head like Oculus now.
More like the Matrix?
No, you'll just see it.
Yeah, like you just jack into it.
I mean, I've mentioned a number of times on this program, and I don't know if you're a big reader or not, but if you want a mind-blowing vision of the future, and I will never stop touting this book, if you want a mind-blowing vision of the future, start with Richard K. Morgan's Altered Carbon and go through the whole trilogy. Do not watch the horrible, terrible, very bad, no good, rotten Netflix butchery of it. Read the damn book.
I think we had a conversation about that as well.
Exactly. We did. And so I'm coming back to it and saying, you know, you're fascinated by this futuristic stuff. Read that. It is the most profound piece of future vision, you know, 500 years out that I have ever read. Ever.
Well, I will get around to reading that one of these days. I do tend to read, but most of my reading tends to be classic literature. Most modern pop culture for me tends to pop up in television, movies, comics, stuff like that. And I do read some modern stuff. I have a Kindle, but I tend to prefer more of the fantasy genre, or I'm one of those people who falls into the classic literature section of the Kindle with all the free books.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, the freebies are great. A translation of Caesar's Gallic Wars, things like that. By the way, a note from Darlene asking me to remind you that there are large parts of West Virginia that are absolutely gorgeous, and I happen to live in one of them. I couldn't resist the other day. It was 2 days ago. It was just absolutely beautiful. So, frankly, I got dolled up and Ferg and I went to the rim of the gorge and took pictures. And I got some of the best pictures of him I've ever taken. And he got a couple of me that were not terrible.
By the way, I saw your Instagram picture that you posted on the Facebook thingy.
Yeah.
Nice picture.
Oh, thank you. It was a fantastic freaking day. It was, but if you ever get the chance, you should see the real West Virginia, and then you get a chance and then take the chance to see what West Virginia and Appalachia looks like when it's been blown to kingdom come. When a series of explosions, each of which is the equivalent of 10 or 12 cruise missiles landing in the same place at the same time, go off. And that's one charge. That's one blast.
Yeah, that's one of the things that always fascinated me about humans, is that we're willing to blow up our own homes if we think there's a nugget of gold under there. But you try telling us there's a fucker over there who's actually trying to steal something, and we'll completely ignore it as long as they're a Republican.
They don't care. The Republicans will blow up other Republicans if there's a dollar involved.
Or in some cases, just a giggle.
Yeah. Well, Rick, it's been good. It's been awfully good talking to you. I've got another caller on the line, and I don't like keeping people waiting, but we will
no
talk.
Problem.
We will.
I wasn't too
No. Don't apologize. No, it's great. It's great. It's wonderful. That's the whole meaning and purpose of conversation radio. We go where the conversation takes us.
And also, I like calling in and talking to you and the people on Friday on the front porch about video games and my day to days.
Absolutely.
Nice.
Yeah. It is good.
Thank you for what you do for us.
Oh, Rick, no, thanks for being part of the community. No thanks needed on this end. Thank you so much. You have a good evening, okay?
You too, and may whoever you believe in or the divine clockwork nature of the universe watch over you.
Thank you. I will take all the watching I can stand. Later now. It's our buddy, the Norseman, Rick, and we will we'll just keep things rolling. Haven't heard from Richard in a while. How are you, Richard?
Well, psychologically, I'm in wonderful condition, and I'm 79 years old. I will be.
Forgive me if I say that blows my mind. You don't. I don't know what it means to sound 79, but you don't sound like my 79-year-old. My 79-year. In my day, we wore an onion on our belt, as was the fashion in those days. You don't sound like
that. I know that. You know, somehow I am still alive mentally. I think I'm young. I had surgery on my rotator cuff last July. You knew that. And I had various kinds of medical people coming over to the house and working with me. Now, on Medicare, the strange thing about funding physical therapy and stuff like that is that if I go to a physical therapy clinic, I have to pay a lot of money. But if they come to me, I don't pay anything. Figure that out. So I had a physical therapist coming over, had an occupational therapist coming over, and the occupational therapist just couldn't get over my age. They kept on saying, you look so young, I don't understand it, and I don't understand it either. But in some way, I think...
Mysterious are the ways of a claims adjuster. A health insurance claims specialist, I should say.
They're all working for United Healthcare in my case. And, I mean, they call it a Medicare Advantage plan. And what that means is that it's a private insurance company that is administering Medicare for you. And there are various advantages to using a Medicare Advantage plan as opposed to straight Medicare from the government. So that's what I'm doing. And I, like I said, I'm I'm doing a lot of heavy duty psychological work with myself, and it has been it is being wonderful. Let's see. Are we still connected, Bob?
Absolutely. I'm listening.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So, some interesting things. I've been hanging out with the atheists on Zoom meetings of various kinds. The atheists are all centered in Knoxville. There's a lot of atheist groups in Knoxville.
College town.
And as you all know, that I have moved to rural eastern Tennessee because I could not afford to keep living in California.
Right.
And, but I'm from New York. I'm from Brooklyn. In fact, I grew up very close to Bernie Sanders and Woody Allen. And,
did you know him growing up?
No, I would have known Bernie Sanders. I went to his high school, except he did not. How about that?
Hold on. You went to Bernie Sanders High School, but Bernie didn't.
That's right.
How does that?
That's right.
How is it then Bernie Sanders High School?
Well, because it's a Bernie Sanders neighborhood, and it was the academic high school. So logically, it would be the place where he would have gone. So that's what I mean by Bernie Sanders High School. I mean, the name of the place is Midwood High School. It's in an area. It's a part of Flatbush that's called Midwood. And anyway, I'm just giving you some context of my life.
Sure.
I spent 10 years in Connecticut off and on, and then I lived in California for over 40 years, and here I am in eastern Tennessee. I always thought I would like to see what it would be like to live in a flyover state.
And now you know.
Oh, my God.
Wait a minute. That "oh my God" was worthy of it, was cowbell worthy, no doubt about that.
I know. So why the hell am I here? Jesus Christ.
Flyover country. I mean, couldn't you go somewhere, you know, above the Mason-Dixie line, above the Cornbone Curtain?
Well, where is that anyway? I mean
you could have gone to Western PA. I mean, Pittsburgh has great public transportation.
Yeah. It does.
Good access to medical care. Did nobody tell you where Tennessee is? That's a joke, Richard.
I'm serious because I'm stuck. I fired my doctor, and it was when we were talking about politics, and he used the words "Sleepy Joe."
Yeah.
That did it.
Yeah, I remember our last conversation. There was some advice along the way. I can't remember exactly what it was, but I do remember I tendered some advice.
Yeah, you did, because he had asked me, "What do you think of Nancy Pelosi?"
Yeah, that's what it was. Anybody who asks you, "What do you think of Nancy Pelosi?" isn't asking because they think Nancy Pelosi is flipping awesome, especially in East Tennessee.
Well, see, that's the thing. It's taken me 5 years to realize I'm in another country, you know. I'm on another planet here. I mean, it's an interesting thing to be a liberal or progressive person in a place like this, as you probably know, is really a bit of work. It's not like being a progressive.
It's fucking exhausting, Richard.
It is. You are right.
I mean, all those years, and I mean, my God, you've been with the Horn Family Community Congregation since jump. You've heard me say that there is a big difference between being progressive in Alabama or West Virginia and being progressive in, you know, California or Massachusetts. And I'm not taking anything away from progressives there. They're wonderful, and they've made wonderful places to live. But for the people who are struggling to have a you know, something resembling progressive governance in, you know, anywhere in the Confederacy, for instance, or in West Virginia, which was not part of the Confederacy, it's a different metric.
Yes, it is.
And a wildly different life.
Yeah. I can say it's... I forgot. But anyway, you know, I was going for my health care to a rural community clinic. And the reason I was doing that was because I'm committed to this model of health care, meaning nonprofit and public. So I've had to wrest myself away from this place. I mean, because I realized that I wasn't dealing with the kind of healthcare governance that I was in California, meaning an actual public HMO run by the county democratically. Very nice. Not the case anymore. So I did some calling around. And I got myself hooked up with the only Democratic doctor in this whole county, I believe.
How long did he take to find?
Well, the Democratic Party here had a little healthcare meeting in the next town, and there were four panelists, and he was one of the panelists. So I knew about him, and I did talk with him. The man is a surgeon, though, but so that's why I never thought of seeing him as a regular doctor. And so I'm seeing him as a regular GP right now.
A surgeon?
He's a surgeon.
Well, good for him, and good for you. That's decent of him to do.
Well, he does see people as a GP. You know, it's like it keeps his interest up. He also works a lot with junkies. And it's very commendable, I think. The only drawback is that I have to pay him as a specialist. So like under my Medicare plan, I don't have to pay to see a general practitioner. I do have to pay to see a specialist. So that, you know, we'll see where it goes. I don't know. I mean, I had what I thought was maybe a stroke in January. I've had a stroke already.
Yeah. So you thought it was the second time around?
Well, let's put it this way. I thought I should take care. I should err on the side of caution this time because the first time it happened was 6 years ago in Dollar Tree. I had a stroke. Of all things, you know, you can have all kinds of amazing. What are they called? Epiphanies? No. It happened at Dollar Tree. And I didn't take it seriously.
You know, there's a certain rhyme. There's a certain rhyme to that, though, Richard. And I'm not making light, but there's been a couple of incidents on a couple of moments on the program lately where I've been reminded of the late great John Prine. And if Dollar Tree if John Prine had not been taken from us by COVID, I would have emailed him the term Dollar Tree Epiphany and just said, run with it.
Yeah, well, the thing was, I had a stroke in Dollar Tree, and what it felt like was that I had the flu, really bad case of the flu with no fever. And so I did not get attention right away. I thought, well, you know, I'll just go home, have dinner, and go to sleep, which is what I did. And I won't belabor you with the rest of it, but I paid for that. And so this time I figured, okay, maybe I'm nuts, but I will go to the ER. There's a hospital here. And it's a private one, for profit.
Smart.
I think it's the first for profit hospital I've been at in 40 years. So it's very, I mean, they're in it for the money. You know, it's a bizarre experience. And why am I bringing this up? Oh, yeah, they found, it's been scanned. And I have partially blocked carotid arteries. So my doctor wants me to go see a specialist in Knoxville.
And you're going to do what your doctor says, right?
Yeah. See, I had to get my car fixed first. You know, it's like when that doctor said to me, Sleepy Joe, I said to myself, fuck this. I am out of here. You know, I am not going to see any more Republicans for anything if I can help it. I am just so goddamn sick of these people. And and my car has needed a lot of work. That's why I haven't gone to Knoxville to see this guy. I didn't want to make the trip. So, you know, with what do they call it? Stimulus payment.
Yeah.
I got my car fixed, and I called up some local Democrats, and they looked up. I said, I want to take my car to a Democrat to be fixed. I am so sick of Republicans. The last guy who worked on my car has a sign out that says, thank you, Mr. Trump. Or he says, thank you, President Trump. And I said, and he didn't wear a mask the last time I went in. You know, and I said, no, I am done with these people. And so I took my car to Democrats to have it worked on. They weren't wearing masks either.
Well, but Southern Democrats are different from other parts of the country Democrats. You know, Southern Democrats may very well have, let's see, a 410 shotgun, an 8-gauge, a 10-gauge, a 12-gauge, a 16-gauge, and a 410, depending on what kind of critter they're hunting. And then they're probably going to have a 223 or an over-under 12-gauge 223 and probably, you know, the 30-06, 270, maybe even some crazy-ass Weatherby 7mm mag, two or three pistols, you know, revolver and semi-auto. I mean, this is a very... We like to think that this country has sort of become homogeneous. It hasn't.
Well, no. I think I've mentioned before calling you that there's this wonderful book. It's called, and I keep forgetting the name of the guy who wrote it. It's called American Nations. And it's about the 11 different, completely different cultures in this country. Have you heard of the book?
No.
Yeah, it's been out for a while. Like I said, I can't remember the guy's name who wrote it, but he is saying that colonist groups came here to different parts of the United States, and of course it's different parts.
And created different kinds of colonies. Yes, absolutely.
And brought totally different cultures with them.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, the classic example are, you know, because we, you know, about Thanksgiving time every year, Richard, we hear the story, and the pilgrims came here in search of religious freedom. They never bothered to mention that the pilgrims, the Puritans in England, were so utterly, completely, hopelessly, unbearably obnoxious that they left England first, went to the Netherlands. The Dutch were like, please, no, really, go, be happy and be happy in the new world, because nobody could stand them. And so, you know, that's some of that religious freedom. Then, of course, William Penn founds Penn's Woods, Pennsylvania, for the religious freedom of the Quakers, who landed in America and became, and you know, they were industrious in England, but they were heretics. And they landed here, built their meeting houses, and proceeded to go into business with a will. And then there's Maryland, which is Maryland for a reason. It's not Maryland. It's Maryland. It was founded under the sponsorship of Lord Baltimore for the purposes of making a safe haven for Roman Catholics.
Ah, I didn't know that part.
Rhode Island began its life as Rogues Island and Providence Plantations because there were because of Roger Williams, who was a renegade Baptist and a rogue, and was run out of town and was run out of town by the Massachusetts Puritans.
Right.
I mean, there's absolute truth to that. And then you know, you've got the penal colony of Georgia. Georgia was actually under James Oglethorpe. Georgia was Australia 1.0.
Meaning what?
It was a penal colony. And then when white people stumble into Botany Bay, the English looked up and said, "Hey, look, somewhere else to send the cut purses and pickpockets and sex workers." And so, for instance, in both Georgia and Australia, there is a certain cachet that attaches to being related to the early criminal settlers of both places.
Ah, well, that's what.
And based on our conversations, a couple of notes coming in. Subject line: Liberal South, David in South Carolina, Stan, who has been with the Horn as long as you and our dear friend Tom in sunny San Rafael and a few others. David says, "I find it impossible to find it." And, you know, that you were just talking about, you know, I wanted to go to a Democratic car mechanic. Well, David says, "I find it impossible to find a gun store owned or run by liberal-minded people. So when I need a gun, I'll have to go to a chain store where I can basically do 99% of the purchase online and then go to the store to complete the purchase. Living in a rural area, there is a significant chance of a rabid animal wandering onto my property. And, you know, you don't want to negotiate with those." That's where you do the whole Atticus Finch, dropping your glasses on the ground and accidentally stepping on them and, you know, wasting the little critter at 30 paces.
Yeah. Well, let me get back to this.
You got a question, though. Hold on. Question for Richard from Billable Rick. Can you ask Richard if he's yet been able to convert his maggot neighbor friend into a Democrat?
No. The last conversation we had was many months ago. I've been avoiding him because I just don't want to talk politics with him. I'm afraid of what I'm going to do to him, you know? I'm afraid of what I'm going to do to anybody here. I have already had words with people about masks, which I should not have done. You know, I walked into the expensive supermarket here, and there were a couple of guys standing on line at the checkout counter with middle-aged guys with beards and no masks on. And I couldn't help myself. I just yelled, "Hey, you guys aren't wearing masks." And one of them said, Nope. And I said, "You want to kill me." No, I didn't say it that way. I said, "You want me to die." And he said, "Nope." And I thought, oh, my God, I better get the fuck away from these guys. I'm losing it. So that's already happened.
Ugh.
So I have avoided my neighbor.
Yeah, and I was going to tell you, if you want to be hip like the young folks, you don't say, Richard, you don't say, "I have avoided my neighbor." You say, "I have ghosted on my neighbor."
Oh boy!
That's the term when you're talking to somebody and then you quit talking on them and talking to them and you just don't answer the messages. You have ghosted them.
I see. I've seen the term. Well, let me get on the. Well, let me finish on this.
Yeah, sure.
American Nations. Everybody, read this book. It is fascinating. It tells a lot about why we're at each other's throats, and, you know, gives a lot of background about that. But, like, I grew up in a part of the country that he called New Netherlands. And, you know, the Dutch came and settled.
Right.
Manhattan,
Manhattan, but really every place around Manhattan, you know, Connecticut and New Jersey and upstate New York. Well, up the Hudson anyway. These places have Dutch names.
Sure.
But a point that I've seen from somebody else with filmmaker, the documentary guy, is New York was not founded. New York City was not founded for religious reasons. It was simply for money.
No, there was none of that religious freedom horseshit. No.
Yeah.
No, it was business.
It was strictly business. It was a corporation. Peter Stuyvesant, the mayor of Manhattan, New York, was a corporate middle manager.
No, he was a ruthless capitalist before capitalism was cool.
Yes, exactly. And so, you know, the English and the Dutch made a deal, and the Dutch just pulled out, and the British, you know, walked in, and Stuyvesant was assigned to some, you know, tropical place and kept being a manager. So that's the basic history of New York. So, the strange thing about it is I never met any Dutch people, you know. I mean, people who came from that stock, they were gone.
Oh, but they're still there.
Anyway.
I mean, I went to college with folks who were from New York who had very, very, very Dutch names. But I was going to suggest to you, if that's a history that you enjoy, several years ago, I think it was during one of my bouts of pancreatitis, I had the opportunity to completely just lose myself in a book. And the name of the book, you know, was provided by a member of this community, and I remain grateful for it because I go back and read it. It is a history, an early history, based on primary source documents, you know, the kind of stuff that Dr. Bill preaches.
Yes, indeed.
And the title of the book, Richard, and I highly recommend it, is, I believe, The Island at the Center of the World. And it is almost exclusively the story of Dutch New Amsterdam.
Wow. I gotta read this.
I think you would be pleased with it.
Yeah. Well, you know, you grow up in a place and there are things that you take for granted that become different when you finally get a different perspective on them. I never realized, I mean, I left New York City at the age of 17, I think. And the thing that I never realized is that the area is pretty much a delta. There's water everywhere.
Yeah.
And islands. But I didn't realize that until I was coming back from someplace on an airplane, you know, and looked down and said, oh my God, look at all that water, you know. You grow up in a place, you don't know it. And the other thing that's really interesting is that there are like these orbits. And so the Boston orbit culturally extends straight west through upstate New York and sort of peters out at maybe, I was going to say Minnesota, but probably, what's that north of Illinois?
What, Wisconsin?
Wisconsin. Yeah. It goes like straight across. And it's like growing up in New York City, I always felt like, you know, upstate New York is like it's a totally different world. And it is. So, anyway, Democrats, yes. This place has Democrats, and they're fighting with each other all the time, like the Democrats. And so I was invited to attend a different online meeting, the meeting of progressive Democrats here. And I have, so usually I'm hanging out with the atheists based loosely in Knoxville. I'm halfway between Knoxville and Chattanooga, so it's 60 miles to either city. And so I was at a meeting on this past Sunday here, about maybe five other people, and I got attacked.
Wait, verbally or physically?
Verbally. Well, I was home. You know, it was online.
Okay. I take nothing for granted. I know where you are.
Yeah. So it was a Google meeting. My other meetings are on Zoom. And I was attacked. A woman felt that I had cut her out on a conversation. She was quick to take offense and attacked me. After I asked a question, she belittled me and then told me to shut up. Now, the person who attacked me is a therapist.
Whoa.
And, yep. And so I sent her. Now, I don't react quickly if I'm attacked.
No, you've never seemed to come across, Richard, as the kind of person who, you know, it hollers, you know, fill your hands, you son of a bitch, and pulls the gun and starts shooting.
Yeah, right. But however, I did burst out at those guys in the supermarket. So, you know, I can do it. Anyway, after the meeting, it's like I realized, what just happened here? I was attacked. And the guy running the meeting is also a therapist. So nobody came to my aid when she attacked me. You see, and nobody called her on it. It just happened. And so I sent her an email short, and I objected to what she had done. And I said, essentially, stop it. She replied back, accusing me of different things and accusing me.
What, the Lindbergh baby kidnapping? What? I mean,
no, whatever it was, it's not relevant, really. The important thing was that she accused me of causing her to abuse me. Now, this is classic abusive behavior.
Wait, hold on. Stop driving your face into my fist? Really?
Yes, indeed. I've been doing a lot of research on abusive personality types. And hopefully Donald Trump will have given us the impetus to really explore this stuff in society. It's like when my son was little, he once asked me if I thought there are any evil people in the world. And I think I hemmed and hawed and didn't really answer him straight. And now, yes, indeed, there are bad people in the world, and there's a whole cluster of types, and I'm paying a lot of attention to this right now. So politically, for instance, Bob, I'm sorry, you have a new name, don't you?
New name, old name. Yeah, Robin, but Bob's okay. It takes everybody some time to get used to this.
Yes. They're getting at, they call them cluster B personalities. So the narcissists and borderlines and antisocial, and I forget one or two others now. And, bullies. Bullies would be harmless if they didn't have enablers, sycophants, the people who truly enable the bullies. So they'd just be drunks in the barroom yelling at the mirror. Trump would be harmless if he didn't have enablers. So I'm fascinated with the people, the people who give the bullies their power. And like I said, hopefully, as a society, we will start investigating how this stuff works. Trump is a cult leader, and I think we need to really, as a society, watch that phenomenon. I had a friend who was a follower of Jim Jones. I didn't know it. And he lived. He stayed alive. He stayed alive because he did not go to Jonestown. You see, there was a base. Jones still had a base in San Francisco. People who were still there. And so when that whole blow up happened, what's the name of the country? Guyana, is it?
Yeah, Guyana.
Is that right?
Yeah, Guyana.
Yeah. When that whole blow up happened, the mass suicide attacks and all that, the people left behind in San Francisco, of course, the press went running to them. The people were totally confused. They didn't know what the hell happened. The world fell apart. And my friend was an interesting fellow. He lost his father at an early age. And I think his father just, you know, like left his mother, so he was raised by his mother. But I think what happened was he spent the rest of his life looking for daddy, you know, looking for a father figure. And this is how people got sucked in to Jim Jones's madness. And, well, anyway, you know, we have a cult, the followers of Donald Trump. And it's an interesting phenomenon. So I'll get back to this thing, the therapist who attacked me. It's not the first time I have been attacked by a therapist. In fact, this is the fifth time. I have been attacked by therapists, by four therapists five times over my lifetime. And so, what I want to share with everybody is that there are bad therapists out there.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And in fact, you said, you mentioned, you gave that account, and Jeremy in Vermont wrote in with a message for you saying, I wonder how many people this so-called therapist has caused suffering or possible death. Dear fucking God, I hope she had no transgender patients.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. And she's very active as a political progressive, which means that to me, she is an absolutely toxic person. And I have to, for my own mental health and self-preservation, I have to simply remove myself from her presence.
So does that mean you don't get to go to any more of the online atheist meetings? I mean, that sucks.
No, she's not an atheist. She's just a progressive Democrat in the so-called progressive Democrat in this town. And so I'm having much more fun with the atheist. You know?
Oh, okay. I misunderstood.
Well, I wasn't clear. The thing was, I'm in an atheist meeting in Knoxville on Sunday mornings at the same time. And it's a lot of fun. Excuse me. It's called the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
That does sound fun.
It's existed for about 15 years as a radio show on low power FM. Low power FM is a special kind of medium. I won't get into it right now.
Oh yeah, I know.
Anyway, there's a low-power FM station, 5 watts, something like that, in Knoxville. And they've been doing this program on there. And, of course, with COVID, everything changes. And the meeting is on Zoom. So the way it works is that we record the show on Sunday morning, and it's broadcast on the low-power FM station on Wednesday evening. But it's also posted up on YouTube now, so you can see what I look like if you want to, anybody. It's called the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. And my name on the show is George Brown. That was my father's pen name. Okay, I am really opposed to surveillance on the web. And so, I have worked in high tech. I've worked for a couple of dot-coms, and I see how just easy it is for engineers to say, oh, let's use this for the service, it's free, blah, 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 blah. There is nothing free on the internet, you know? The phrase is, you've said something like that about radio once. The purpose of radio is to sell you to the sponsor, right? You've said that. And the version of that for the internet is that if you're not paying, you are the product. And so I'm very, very...
Yeah, that's the absolute truth.
Yeah, I will not participate in Facebook at all, ever. And I keep way far away from Google. And Google services, they are very seductive. And they're very, very good. So I'm paying a price for that, but that's the price. Anyway, therapists, there are some good ones, however. And that's great. So I just wanted to say, though, that a bad therapist can really make a person feel like crap. And they can, as your listener said, how many people has she damaged? I have a little story about that. I was talking with a nurse today, and she told me that there was a message left on her sister's voicemail by a therapist that said, oh, grow up. And guess what?
What's that?
She killed herself. She killed herself.
Oh, shit. That's horrifying.
I am very sad. I'm very angry.
Yes.
I don't know what else to say about this, but I wanted to share this story with you.
I'm glad you did, my God. People need to thoroughly look into those that they look to for counseling, therapy, that kind of thing, including investigating, you know, the state licensing board for complaints, things like that.
Well, I have been rehearsing writing this woman a final email. And, in fact, I will read this part to you. Qualities I appreciate in a therapist. Maturity. Kindness. Support. These are just words I threw out. Self-knowledge. Ethical. Thoughtful. Reflective. Supportive, healing, wisdom, compassion, self-reflective, and self-awareness. What I got from this woman was defiance, cruelty, quick to take offense, vengefulness, abusiveness, judgmental, blaming, vindictiveness, self-justifying, wounding, combative, accusing, belittling, rigid. Wow. And it's all true.
Yeah.
So my, again, if anybody mistreats you and then blames you for causing them to abuse you, don't buy it.
No, never, never, never.
Yeah, try to be aware that they are doing this to you and do not blame yourself. Do not take on that baggage. they are trying to harm you. They are trying to hurt you. You look better than that.
Yeah, as Jack in Shreveport points out, Richard, counselors are supposed to have their own regular sessions with a therapist.
Well, I wasn't aware of that. Oh, and the other thing that this woman did in her email to me was went on about the virtues of Kamala Harris because she's tough.
And well, okay. I mean, really, Jesus Christ. Maybe she was drinking? Sorry, I'm not making excuses, but that sounds like somebody was drinking.
Oh, you mean the therapist? I don't know. I mean, let me tell you this. Having lived in the San Francisco Bay Area for a long time, and having lived in San Francisco for 10 years and been a San Francisco employee, it's like I keep my eye on San Francisco politics every once in a while. I don't watch it constantly, but every once in a while I take a look and see, hey, what's going on over there? And, you know, so I watched Kamala Harris's rise. And she disgusts me, you see.
Well, hold on, Richard. She doesn't disgust me.
Oh, both of her. I
eagerly voted for the ticket with Joe Biden and Kamala Harris on it.
And well, I did too, but I had a purpose. I had a purpose for doing it, which is that Kamala Harris is so vicious that she's perfectly suited to sink her teeth into Donald Trump's leg. And that's her virtue for me. Don't forget, I said I've been watching.
Yeah, I am not going to subject her to standards, because I heard all the filth that was slung at her over the course of the campaign. I'm not going to subject her to standards that men are not subjected to. Anything having to do with her sex life, anything having to do anything having to do with how she played power politics. You know, we respect that in men, but somehow or another, women don't get to.
I'm not talking about that.
I mean, there were things that bothered me, and probably the single greatest one, the one that did not go answered, was and it was when she was Attorney General of California, and she was not counsel of record in this case. It was one of her subordinates, but it was a matter of the Attorney General's office going into court, serving as counsel to the California Bureau of Prisons, or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
In which the lawyer, she didn't send him in there saying, you know, these are your marching orders. But that lawyer, that assistant or associate or deputy, whatever, attorney general, and my God, the California Attorney General's office. I mean, I have some passing experience with the Attorney General's office in West Virginia. At one point in time, I was the Attorney General of West Virginia for one case, for all intents and purposes. But there were a bunch of lawyers in that, but nothing compared to the, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if there were 5,000 lawyers in the California Attorney General's office. It would not surprise me in the least. But one of her subordinates, one of those 1,000 or 5,000 or however many there are, marched into court and argued before the court that the state of California could not afford not to engage in involuntary servitude. That was the nature of the argument. And that the California had to be able to treat prison labor like slaves. And that was disturbing to me. But I also
Just a second. Yeah.
The other side of that coin, however, is if you read the 13th Amendment.
Yeah.
It says, let me call up the text so I will be able to speak to this competently. The 13th Amendment, of course, is the constitutional amendment passed during the Civil War that eliminated slavery, chattel slavery. And it says in Section 1, neither slavery nor involuntary servitude, and then there's, you know, there's always a caveat, comma, except as punishment for crime whereof the party shall have been duly convicted, shall exist within the United States or any place subject to their jurisdiction. And so wow. the argument that her subordinate made was based upon sound constitutional law. Everybody says, oh, the 13th Amendment got rid of slavery. Not completely, it didn't. It is perfectly legal upon yeah. It is perfectly legal upon conviction, due conviction of crime, to enslave a person in the United States, and it is absolutely legal all the way up to this moment on the 11th day of March 2021.
Well, that's fascinating.
It would be, it, you know, but that issue bothered me because for some reason or another, it never went addressed. And you've just seen how easily I addressed it.
Yeah.
And it was ugly.
See, I have not been watching right wing attacks on Kamala Harris. I just was talking about what I have observed myself, while I lived in California and the Al Franken stuff. Because I was reading a piece about Al Franken in the New Yorker just yesterday, and it's very sad. You know, I mean, it was framed. It was truly a right wing.
Oh, you're talking about Al Franken?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it was a hatchet job, but Kamala Harris wasn't. Kamala Harris wasn't at the center of that. That was promulgated by Kristen Sinema, or not Sinema,
yes,
Gillibrand of New York, and a bunch of others jumped on board. But you know what? Kristen Gillibrand didn't make Al Franken resign. You know who made Al Franken resign? Al Franken.
Schumer.
Al Franken.
Yeah, he did, right? But Schumer convinced him.
Schumer is the one who's. If you want to blame anybody for Al Franken, blame Chuck Schumer. Because he's the one who sank the Shiv. He's the one who said, nobody's going to have anything to do with you, and you need to resign.
Yeah. I miss him. I really do.
Well, I do too. Okay. But I'm a political grown-up, Richard. And as such, I understand that Al Franken was not God. Okay? I liked him a lot,
right.
But the political, you know, because of the nature of the work that I've done in Washington, D.C., I've learned a few things. We begged Al Franken, just introduce the AIC Act in the Senate. Just do it. Even if it, just do it. It's in the House. It needs to be introduced in the Senate. It needs to exist in two places in both houses at the same time. Just do it. But if you are going to be a senator from the state of Minnesota, you will take your nose and you will place it in the brown and stinky place where it concerns the mining industry in northern Minnesota, because they exert a tremendous amount of power inside the Minnesota Democrat Farm Labor Party, which is the Democratic Party of Minnesota. That's the reality.
And what was it that exactly happened?
Well, I mean, nothing happened. Nothing happened.
So he wouldn't lift a finger?
None. Hillbillies dying 1,000 a year in West Virginia alone. Wouldn't lift a finger. Didn't matter. Didn't want to piss off the mining interests in northern Minnesota. Because you got to have them if you want to win a general election against a Republican nominee. It's just a fact.
Yeah.
And this isn't me being cantankerous or disagreeable for the sake of disagreement. It's just that there's an old New Testament verse, which I would not expect you to necessarily be familiar with as an atheist. But there's a verse that says, for all have sinned and come short of the glory of God. Now, you know, I'm certainly no Christian. I'm not religious at all. But that is a true observation if you take it in its existential sense. No one achieves political perfection. Not a single person. If by some miracle Bernie had become president of the United States at some point in time, he would have pissed off his progressive base, because he wouldn't have done whatever the sparkle fart propelled unicorn cavalry purity patrol wanted.
So you're saying you got to break some eggs?
Well, yeah, that or you know, what's his name, Bismarck, who said, if you like sausage and if you like politics, the two things you never want to see made are law and sausage.
Oh, boy.
Because in both cases, it is a disgusting, vile process.
I got to tell you a little story.
Well, let me, you mentioned Jim Jones, Richard. Let me throw something your way. We got a note from Matt in San Francisco, you know, your old stomping grounds. Yep. And Matt says, brush with Jim Jones. At various points of her life, my mom went on searches for spirituality, going to different churches, etc. I distinctly remember going to a community in San Francisco, the People's Temple. It was not very old, but I do remember the vibe being weird. She didn't take to that cult. I've always been thankful that for whatever reason, she did not acclimate to that organization. I remember watching what happened in Jonestown on the news and thinking, Jesus Christ, I knew that shit was weird. I thought of Jonestown when the attack on the Capitol happened. I thought of Jackie Speer being at the Capitol and thinking, for heaven's sake, she was lying on the tarmac after being shot in Jonestown, and now she's doing her job as a congressperson, and more cult firers are threatening her life. Life is indeed a trip sometimes. Thank you, Matt. That's
thank you. Yes, thank you, Matt.
Wait a minute. I survived Jonestown for this?
Yes. Oh, I remember her.
You might forgive her for thinking maybe she was a little snake bit.
Yeah. Well, there was a period in the 70s, when did this happen? I can't remember. It was in the 70s, wasn't it?
Yeah.
There was a period when Jim Jones was in the newspapers every single day. He was the best thing that ever happened since sliced bread. He was the local, all of a sudden he became the most beloved guru in the whole town. The newspapers were quoting him every day. The city, the board of supervisors were using him as a consultant. He had all these plans about how he was going to fix crime.
Jim Jones. You know. Jim Jones was an absolute liberal progressive. Make no mistake. And then he just got weirder and weirder and weirder.
He had a brain tumor, a big one.
Yeah.
Showed up, you know, on his corpse afterwards, naturally.
You don't think that's the explanation for his behavior, do you? I mean, that sounds like I know. That sounds like a leading question, and I apologize.
No, I have no idea. I have no idea. I've wondered about that over the years, you know. He was active to the north of the city. I think around Santa Rosa or, you know, up in that direction somewhere, Sonoma maybe, before he came to San Francisco. And I think in the Midwest somewhere, some history.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened to my friend, by the way.
Wow.
He's a pretty bright guy, but every once in a while, he would say something to me like, oh, I know this man. He said he's going to invest money in my business. And, you know, he would always find some kind of fatherly helper to believe in, and who would help him in some way. And this is after the whole People's Temple thing happened. But he was into some interesting stuff. It's like one day he called me up. I think it was in something like 1995. And he was the salesperson. He was a salesman for a company that taught Unix. And said to me...
And that's UNIX, not EUNUCHS.
That's right, yeah. It's the computer language. There was a company in Berkeley named Learnix that taught Unix. And he said, so that's who he was working for. And he said, we have a seat left over in the class. How'd you like to come and learn Unix for free? And I said, sure. So that's how I learned all about Unix, and it's partially why I'm using Linux right now on my computers.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
I never quite got there. So let me backtrack just a minute, Richard, to make sure that we've got, you did not have a second stroke.
No. Well, I don't think I did. I mean, I've had some like little mini strokes. Remember when, what was his name, Mr. Stress?
Yeah.
You remember the time you were talking with
very well.
He couldn't speak. See, I've been there. I've been through that. It's scary. It happened here, in fact. I was talking with my son on the phone, and all of a sudden, I couldn't have words. I couldn't do words, you know. Like, I knew the concepts of what I wanted to say, but I could not form words. I couldn't relate to words. I've had that happen visually.
How utterly terrifying.
And I've had it happen visually, too, where, you know, it's like I'll go to the computer, and I look at the screen, and I don't know what I'm seeing. I don't know what I'm reading. I know their words, but I can't sound them. I have no idea what they mean. It's like they're shapes on the screen. And it passes in a few minutes.
Yeah, but if it passes, I mean, doesn't that sort of tell you, get thee to a doctor?
Yeah, it kind of does. It kind of does. And, I mean, you know, I don't know what to do, except don't eat meat anymore. You know, eat like the Seventh-day Adventists. Like my doctor who I fired, you know, he was an Adventist. And I thought, I mean, apart from a couple other things, he was an osteopath. And I was having trouble with my shoulder. I had been seeing a nurse practitioner who got bored with me and would not get involved with diagnosing my shoulder. I was walking around with a torn rotator cuff for months. And I decided, hey, I'll go see this guy instead. He's her supervisor. He's an osteopath. You know, osteopath. He's partially a chiropractor, right?
Yeah, kinda. But I mean,
yeah.
Osteopathy has expanded well past manipulations of bones and joints.
Sure.
I mean, you can graduate osteopath school and be a brain surgeon. You can graduate osteopath school and be a psychiatrist.
Yes, I've seen one, in fact. I won't see him because he does Christian counseling.
Yeah, okay, no, that's a different reason.
Yeah, that's a different reason, but anyway, the osteopath who I saw let me down as an osteopath, and he also let me, you know, I thought I would pick up some good nutrition ideas from him because I know he's a vegetarian. And by the way, another little tidbit to share. The Seventh-day Adventists are onto something. And They have schools here and there. They have a university in Southern California called Loma Linda, and it is just to the east of San Bernardino. I didn't know about it, but they train doctors. They train osteopaths, which is where this guy went to school. It's a Seventh-day Adventist community, and people live old in this place, you know, like to 103 years old. And so that got me interested. What can I learn from these guys? The religion is totally insane. I mean, it's a, you know, it got started as, you know, a bunch of people went to the hilltop to await to be raptured up.
Yeah, and that never showed up, did it?
They never show up. How many times? How many times have people done this? You know. So that's how they started.
But that's how religion works. So you don't actually have to get shit right.
Well, you know, I make fun of the Christians and have coming as an atheist coming out of a Jewish background. Jewish people don't trust Christians. I mean, in
pretty
general.
Good reasons not to.
Exactly, pretty good reason not to, and not that that makes all Jews wonderful people, because it absolutely does not. You know, and there they are in Israel, you know, dumping all over the Arabs. So, if any of you guys want to criticize Israel, please, you have my blessing. Go ahead and do it.
Right, I mean they're and you know they've been very effective, their lobbying and PR arm, in trying to equate criticism of the Israeli government with anti-Semitism, and those two are not equivalent. You can support Israel's right. You can support Israel's right to exist. And unequivocally, and at the same time say, you know, it's curious how Netanyahu's government is behaving a lot like a certain government in the mid-30s in Western Europe.
Indeed, it is. You're right. Yes. Oh, God. So nobody is holier than anybody else, I guess. I'm not.
Oh, and by the way, Jeremy says, you started out right about the Seventh-day Adventists. They're on something. Not on to something. They're on something.
No, seriously. This doctor, you see, the thing about the doctor was that he was not forthcoming with information about this. You see, I would say to him, you know, those Adventists, you know, I would say, the Adventists are vegetarians. They live to be an old age. You know, I'd like to become a vegetarian. You know, he'd just leave that flat. I'd say, I don't know how to make the transition. He would not say anything.
You know what? You're better. If you're really interested in something like that, Richard. And I find myself eating less and less meat, but I can't sign on to anybody's dogma. And you don't necessarily have to be a vegetarian to be a Seventh-day Adventist. And in point of fact, you know, any faith system is going to have good, fine, wonderful people in them. And I know absolutely lovely, delightful human beings who were part of the Seventh-day Adventist Church.
But the
larger point is that if you want to, and it's not expressly vegetarian, but if you want to learn about the, for God's sakes, the people who are living well and by living well I mean living into their third into their you know three digits and doing so with quality of life, you want to learn about the Mediterranean diet.
Thank you.
For instance, there's one little similarity between hillbilly cuisine and Mediterranean cuisine, and that is dandelions. Dandelions. Now, you have to pick your dandelions out of a field or a yard that hasn't been sprayed with fucking Roundup, but if you pick the little, not when they get big, but the little tender dandelion greens, and... You know, you got to pick a mess of them. We call them a mess here in Appalachia. You've probably heard that term in Tennessee. But you pick a mess of dandelion greens, and you put them in a colander and you set them in the sink and you rinse the living bejesus out of them. Rinse, 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 because, you know, they live out in the wild. They can be dirty, just like any other growing thing. Be covered in dirt and spider poop, who knows. But you rinse them, and you shake them in the colander. You put out a thickness of paper towels. You dump the dandelion greens out on them, and you pat them gently. You don't want to break them. You pat them gently until you've patted them pretty much dry. Then you heat up a skillet with some olive oil in it. You don't want to get it to where it smokes, because olive oil will burn. I don't mean like catch fire. It's just nasty when it gets above like 400 degrees or something. But you want to use some olive oil, and you get it hot, and you throw your dandelion greens in there, and you toss them, and you braise them and kind of saute them in that olive oil and just keep them moving. They'll wilt, and then when you're ready to serve them, you squeeze a lemon across them, hit them with some coarse kosher salt, put them on the plate, and it's heaven. And it's one of the in Appalachia and the Mediterranean both. It is a spring tonic. It is really, really good for you. You know, it's a great big whopping hammer load of potassium, and God only knows what. But you know, the big trick is eat a lot more vegetables than you do meat.
Yes, yeah, that's, and I don't
that's,
do that.
That's why it's kind of a miracle that Donald J. Trump is still among the quick. But
what do you mean?
Well, because, you know, his idea of eating his vegetables is, you know, having a pickle on his big fucking Mac.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
So, but no, there are great Mediterranean diet cookbooks out there, you know, fish and lots and lots and lots of veggies and lots of greens. Good God, you live in greens heaven. You live in East Tennessee. Turnip greens, kale, collard greens, mustard greens.
Well, I hate that stuff. Yeah, you know.
That's because you've never had it good.
I only had it in cans.
Well, okay, yeah, like I just said, I could teach you how to make a pot of turnip greens or kale or mustard or whatever, collards.
And actually, you would
weep. They'd be so good.
I would hope so. I mean, I get it. I get food for old people. It's kind of like Meals on Wheels. I can go over to the senior center here and pick up 5 frozen dinners every week, which I do.
Yeah. That, no. I mean, to one degree or another, most Americans live that way.
But it's somehow, I mean, the company that makes all these meals, I mean, it's a big business. Meals on Wheels is a huge business. There are central kitchen companies that make the food and deliver it. So it all comes out to the senior center here from Chattanooga every, you know, used to be 5 days a week. And when I had my heart surgery, I got Meals on Wheels for, you know, at least a half a year.
Yeah, odd you would mention Meals on Wheels, because I had the story out of Texas a couple of nights ago, I think, where the local executive director of a county Meals on Wheels published an op-ed in the local newspaper explaining that that dinosaurs and human beings cohabited in Babylon.
Oh. Well,
you know, careful with those Meals on Wheels, Richard. It may have some dinosaur in it.
Well, it's the food is actually not bad, but they, you know, it's the South here, so there's a lot of greens come with it often, and somehow it has never quite made it for me.
Well, if it's Meals on Wheels, Richard, it's going to be by definition bland. Because, you know, especially since it's going out to a largely elderly population, it's not going to be it's not going to be salted up. I want you to eat your greens, and that's not, I'm not being facetious. I really do. I want you to learn that they can be good, and even if they're out of a can, you can still make them better. And what what you need for that, depending, do you like hot and spicy at all?
What, say that again?
Do you like,
do I like hot and spicy?
Yeah.
Yes, I do. I do.
Okay, so get yourself a jar of pepperoncinis. Or get yourself a bottle of Tabasco sauce, or go down to Dollar General. I think a bottle of Crystal hot sauce is 99 cents. And when your greens show up, blast those little bastards with your Crystal hot sauce or your McElhenney's Tabasco or what, pepperoncini pickle juice, even cider or malt vinegar. It will change the way you look at them. It'll bring all that greens goodness out, and you'll get the tart and the tangy and a little bit of heat from the chilies. And next thing you know, do they ever bring you cornbread?
Yes. It's not the sweet kind.
It's not supposed to be sweet. If God wanted sugar in cornbread, he would have called it cake. So, you know, there's going to be some of that juice from the greens there, and you take your cornbread and you sop it in that juice. That's called pot liquor.
Yeah.
And it's a special kind of heaven.
So what am I doing? I'm getting a can of greens, some kind of greens, right?
Yeah. And a bottle of 99-cent Crystal hot sauce.
Margaret Holmes.
Yes, Margaret Holmes. Get Margaret Holmes collards or turnip greens, and they're delicious. And they'll be seasoned. They might be cooked in a little bit of hog fat, and that makes greens yummy too. In fact, I had a note just a moment ago that, you know, the things we get into on this program, in regard to dandelion greens, Jack in Shreveport said, so there's no ham hock involved then? Well, there can be. You know, you can take a piece of country ham from Benton Smokehouse there, not far from you, and you can pan fry it and get the grease off of that, and you can add a little oil to that and saute your dandelion greens, and that's happy.
So, Bob, you're going to hate me, because I just had some Benton's today.
I don't hate you. I envy you.
It's prosciutto is what I had. Somebody got it for me, and
Somebody thinks very highly of you.
I don't know if he does or not. Yeah, you know, while I've been sick, people have, or recovering really, people have done favors for me. And a fellow took me over to this clinic that I mentioned. And so while I was in seeing the doctor, he went over to Benton's and picked up the prosciutto.
Nice.
This was a few months ago. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if this is a Southern sort of thing. I'll tell you something that has happened that's been perplexing the hell out of me, is that people have been friendly and offered to do favors for me. And it's been really nice, except they don't come through. They don't do it, you know?
Yeah.
And so like I said, I'm perplexed. I don't know what this is about. It's happened a few times.
Well, what those are your brain doesn't process words or speech. Those are transient ischemic attacks. I'm no doctor, and I don't play one on the radio, but I've known a lot of people who dealt with them. And they're often described as mini strokes. But you need to get to the doctor over at Richard, because we love you, okay? You've been a friend of this program for a long damn time, and we want you to keep being a friend of this program for a long damn time. You need to go and tell them, you know, to tell them what's happening, tell them the last time it happened. You know how to talk to a doctor. Come on, you ran a healthcare system, for Christ's sakes.
Yeah. Well, my last doctor was really my friend, and he made some mistakes, but I still love him and miss him. You know, when I left, he asked me to hug him.
Nice.
The young guy. Yeah. Imagine having a relationship with your doctor like that.
That's wonderful when you get one like that.
He's sure as hell has not happened here. Oh, give me a break.
That's the thing I don't understand about this doctor I was complaining about, because he's a Trump cultist. How the hell can you be a man of science?
How can you be anything but the fact of the matter they exist? And by the way, you have engaged the input of the Horn community. Let's see. Cynthia in the Bay Area. Oh my God, I put a bunch of shakes of that Tabasco sauce in almost everything I cook. I don't add so much that it makes the dish hot, but it sure brings out the flavor. I love it. And then spinach and garlic. A nice combo, though you might want to avoid me after I've had it. I understand. Randy Radar says the best way to eat my spinach is to dose it with a dash of Walmart's Great Value Zesty Italian dressing. That's another way. Or if you take like a piece of fried, you can take baby spinach after you've washed it and patted it dry, put it on the plate, and you can take like a piece of fried fish right out of the skillet, and you lay it on top of that spinach, and it will wilt and partially cook the spinach, and then you just have the fish with the spinach, and it's heavenly.
Isn't that nice? With the Great Value, what is it called?
Oh, the Great Value Zesty Italian Dressing.
Oh, okay. I've avoided Walmart for years.
You know, the store brand Zesty Italian at Ingles or Food City, it's all probably manufactured in the same in the same plant.
Yes, absolutely.
And then
do you have Ingles?
No, I just happened to run across them in the North Georgia mountains once.
I mean, they're kind of like the most expensive store in this place.
Yeah, but they're beautiful stores. It's a lot like Publix.
They are well run. Yes, indeed.
And by the way, Steve from Georgistan, Southern style collard greens, 1 pound package or one large bunch of collard greens cleaned and chopped, 2.5 cups of water, 2 heads of garlic peeled and chopped, 1/4 quart of apple cider vinegar, and 1/2 cup of brown sugar. And in a big stock pot, you put the greens, the water, the garlic, the vinegar, and the brown sugar. You bring it to a boil, and you simmer the greens in it for about 1/2 hour. You bring it, you know, you lower the heat away from the boil, make it simmer. Cook it for about 1/2 hour until it's just tender. Hit it with the salt and pepper, and eat. And, you know, please have cornbread for the pot liquor, because pot liquor is heaven.
You know, before I go, I want to share a little story with you.
You know, the time flies when we talk, Richard. It really, really does. I'm so glad you called.
Yeah, well, I have more things to say, but some other time. Anyway, I was, you know, to be, as a child growing up in New York, I would visit my relatives in West Virginia. And to me, as a city kid, that was like magic to be in the country. I can't tell you how wonderful that experience was to me. So I think the first time I was in West Virginia was about 1948 by train. And much later, you know, when I was a teenager, my uncle took us out to eat to a Chinese restaurant in downtown Charleston. They lived in Charleston. It was a Chinese restaurant. And so we walked in, we sat down. The waiters were all Americans, you know, white people. That's what I mean.
Yeah.
They were white people. And what they did for food was they opened up cans of Chunking chow mein and heated them up on the stove.
Oh, dear God.
You know, the Chunking is out of business now. So it's La Choy. It's the same damn thing. And it's like, that's where West Virginia was at when I was a kid. And, you know, now, of course, you've got Mexican restaurants, right? I mean, it's transformed. It's all different.
Yeah, it is and it isn't. We're a little bit more, it's hard to use fast food and describe your culture as cosmopolitan as a result of having a Taco Bell, but I guess. Yeah.
Well, let me get off and make some room for your program's almost over.
We're pretty much done. And I didn't, I got my shot today. And I didn't.
Which one, the first or the second?
I got my first dose of the Pfizer.
Oh, the Pfizer. Wow.
I have a little headache, but I'll be okay. But I didn't know if I was going to go. I didn't know if I was going to go the whole 3 hours, but you've made it easy. And I thank you, Richard.
Well, let me address that for a second here. My county's health department is a little strange here. I've had a conversation with a nurse over the phone who has assured me that the death count from COVID is inflated because people get paid money.
Oh, Jesus, please no. Yeah. God, that thing has spread more broadly than the virus itself.
That's a nurse, Bob. And the thing was, I called the health department to find out where the numbers were coming from. It's like I'm trying to find out about the deaths in particular. The numbers are all coming out of Johns Hopkins University. Where's Johns Hopkins getting the numbers from? And so that's why I called my local health department, talking with this nurse. That's a few months ago. About the COVID vaccine, I got the Moderna vaccine.
You got the Dolly. Well, you're in East Tennessee. Of course you got the Dolly shot.
Oh, it was Dolly. Yeah, I forgot about that. Anyway, they did it at the local county park, which is a strange place. It's in like a big horse arena with a roof over it, third floor. But they had their act together. They really did a good job.
Well, you know what? Let me take a moment real quickly and just say thank you to the people here in Fayette County who make these vaccine clinics work. It was held at the old National Guard Armory in Oak Hill, which is now owned by a church. And it's called the Lewis Christian Center, and it was run with military precision. And oddly enough, one of the people one of the groups who is making sure that people that all the vaccines get used is the Democratic Party of Fayette County. Didn't see any Republicans, but
Hoping for me to get that. Yeah, I got
it. I cannot say enough good about these people. And I was so proud to see, it's 50 and up and you can like get a shot if you're 40 and a teacher, that kind of thing. But there was a cross section of every sort of person in this county. And it stayed busy. And you walked in, you said, yeah, I got an appointment. They checked you off the list. They gave you your paperwork. You walked into a separate room where everybody was socially distanced and masked. You filled out your form. You filled out your vaccine card. As soon as you were done, bang, you were sitting at a table waiting for your shot. And once you had your shot, they handed you a little kitchen timer. And I had to sit there for 15 minutes. Agnes sat there for 30, and we were done, and we both go back on April Fool's Day for our second shot, and I was just proud. I know that sounds crazy, but I was just proud.
Yes, I was too, in a way. The people were good. I had somebody drive me over to get my second shot because my car wasn't ready out of the garage, and we went over to the same place, and there's nobody there. The county had neglected to tell me that they had moved the location to their own office. So we drove, clear across town the other direction. And so we both show up. My friend is driving, and me. I have the appointment. And nurse comes out in the parking lot and gives me the shot. And she says to my friend, who was 63 years old, she says, would you like a shot also? He says, sure. So he got his first shot. I got my second shot. This is all surprise.
That's just beautiful. Just beautiful. Well, Richard, I do have to roll, and I want to thank you.
If you got a moment, let me make one little point.
Okay.
I got my second shot, and 24 hours after I got the shot, I got side effects, and I didn't know. I wasn't sure that's what they were. I called my son. He just went online, and all the symptoms that I had were right on the CDC website, except that my teeth hurt. 12 hours after that, my symptoms were gone, and that's been it. I'm done.
Well, I'm glad it was that simple, and I hope it is. I hope it is for us. Richard, it's been a delightful conversation. Yeah. I'm so glad you called in. You know, we worry when we don't hear from people.
Yes.
And
yes,
you you are a dear member of this community.
What happened to that woman in Columbia City, Oregon?
I haven't heard from her in a long, long time. Maybe she'll write it. I don't know. But Richard, you have yourself a good evening, and let's talk again soon. Okay.
Yes, yes. Be well.
Be well, and if you have another one of those episodes, go to the damned emergency room, okay? Please?
It cost me money. Yes, okay.
All right, I'll see you. Bye. And so here we are at the end of the program. If somebody can, kick in $20 or so, we will at least not be looking at a $1,000 Friday on the Front Porch Community Made Miracle tomorrow. Thanks so much. It is always an honor and a pleasure to know that I'm talking to real live human beings when I hot up the mic. I couldn't do this if it was just a podcast. It's knowing that you were there that makes this all worthwhile. Even if the calls don't come in, even if nobody was emailing, it would still matter knowing that there were people sharing this program in real time. So thank you. And thank you to our Patreon and PayPal subscribers for being partial sponsors of the program. Thank you to our a la carte contributors. Y'all are exclusively why this program exists. Thank you to each and every one of you who shares your precious finite time engaging in this program in no matter what manner you may choose. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky and Steve. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Brand new Malloy on the way at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m. Pacific. Best place to listen to the first run of Malloy, of course, is HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Ben, you've done so much for so long. Just please, please keep healing. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20-plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Please stay safe. Get your vaccine as soon as you can. President Biden should be starting an address right now. He's going to say that he's ordering every state to vaccinate anybody who wants it, I think, by May. He may even say that we should be back to something resembling normal by the 4th of July if everybody gets their shots. If you can get yours, please do. If you can't yet, please get it as soon as you possibly can. In the meantime, wear your mask. Don't touch your face. Wash your hands frequently. Wear gloves if you can get them. Use hand sanitizer. Take hand sanitizer with you everywhere. Use it liberally. Maintain your social distance 15 feet between people with masks and 15 light years between you and someone who doesn't have a mask. And for God's sakes, if somebody comes towards you and says, "Well, I don't know about that brown woman. She might have had some mean tweets." Avoid that person like the plague. Because he is. Later.